This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the
place to
be. The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might have shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed. Mm-hmm.
Sharon Lawson Bram, skidamarinky-dinky-dink.
Yeah.
Skidamarinky-doo.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I wanted to drive that freaking ho train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pie. Watch your mouth, you strike with me.
That's a bit much. You who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. 5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
Hi there, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to a great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rivera, coming to you live here on this Tuesday evening. And it, Scott Criscola, is a big time because we are here to chat WrestleMania 22. How are you doing?
I am fantastic. And on my way, I'm making it tonight. Welcome to Place to Be Nation, episode 403 of The Mothership. And I've been listening to, as we're... trying our best, JR. Always good to talk to you, of course, on this Tuesday evening. Or a different night this week, but... trying to be proactive this time around, JR. We are a pretty healthy gap away from... let's be honest, a pretty iconic number to get to episode 500. So, I've been trying to listen to some of our older shows. And I found some pretty good gems that I think we can make into a fun montage of the... you know, of our history, because there's been some pretty fun, moments. Brian Shields, mm-hmm. Remember him? Our good friend Brian. We haven't had him on in a while. We got to get him back on. Some of our older vaults, a couple of headlines. There's been some fun stuff. Remember headlines? Mm-hmm. It seems like 20 years ago we used to do headlines.
It feels like 20 years ago we started the show. We got a long way to go. So
I know.
We save the reminiscing for.
I know.
97 episodes from now.
I know. I'm just saying, it's been a lot of fun turning the page down memory lane. But like I said, plenty down the line. But yeah, Tuesday night, you had a good weekend.
I love
the pictures. The pictures of your son just get better and better. I cannot wait for his collage when he graduates from high school or whatever and realize
he is a
old guinea badass he was at.
I think I'm going to start submitting him for like modeling gigs because he is really takes like these crazy good pictures out of nowhere. And I'm not even saying just like good looking. I'm just saying like he does these poses and faces. It's just weird. He's uncanny with the pictures he takes. But anyway.
He really is.
It's like the fifth unbelievable one we've got. Like this is one of him on the bike. But anyway. By the way, so before this call, mm-hmm. you had to hang up and update Skype. Now, I feel like you have to upgrade and update Skype a lot. Like, have you upgraded to Windows 95 yet on that machine you got over there? What is the issue that's going on?
I don't know, but it's just everybody has it. Why would it be just me? I mean, I don't think
I literally
it's
have
me.
Not updated Skype in like months. I don't get
I don't know. It just
update.
I mean, I
feel
have,
like every call I have to update Skype.
I know. I don't get it either. I have Windows whatever the new one was, Windows 10. I mean, I have it brand new. Everything's working fine, but It seems every time it says do an upgrade. And we've had some issues with
you're actually doing the upgrade, right? You're not just like restarting it. You're going.
No, I'm clicking the. That's why the call earlier dumped out because it did its thing. But whatever. Quite I'm here. Who cares?
No, I don't know. I'm just saying. There's like a deeper issue going on.
Everything's fine. Right. I mean, the recorder had to update as well, but whatever.
All right.
We're here. We're good.
Okay, we're here.
This isn't Halloween Havoc 98. We're halfway through our main event talk.
We'll see.
Things, we're going to go to bars.
We haven't gotten there yet. We'll see.
No.
Hey, what is going on here?
Sorry we're freaking you out, Tubby. I know it's Tuesday, but in any event. Tonight, inside the Big Steel Box, a show, JR, that you and I absolutely love, and we will gush most of it this evening, because it's one of those shows that, again, maybe one you haven't seen in a long time, and then once you watch it, you realize, wow, I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And that show is WrestleMania 22.
One of the fun things about having Sirius is songs like Big Time, that they actually play a decent amount. Like I hear it a lot on the classic Rewind station there.
Yes.
So it always gets me excited. I actually heard it this past week on there, too. So I was like, oh, it's good timing, because you'll hear it probably multiple times here tonight in the show. And I was actually thinking it'd be funny if, like, WWE, instead of just playing Big Time, actually played other songs, but changed all the lyrics to Big Time, just to really get across, like the Final Countdown. You know, it's a big time, big time. You know, it's all different songs, but just Big Time replacing everything.
That's funny.
Big time, big time, big in time. My mind and my money. You know, just like the same, all different songs of Big Time.
Funny.
Because I mean, we hear Big Time. Was this the most played? I'm trying to go through my head quick. Since
My Way?
Yeah. It had to be, right?
Yeah. Because I don't think because Mania hasn't – since My Way, I don't think Mania has had this mainstream a song as its theme.
Well, what was the Limp Bizkit one for 19? Because they were the official favorite band. Of
wasn't it Roland?
Yeah, was it Roland? Yeah.
Yeah, it was Roland. Because they played it live for him.
That's for Taker, but was that the show's theme? I don't know. But anyway, I don't remember a song like this since My Way where it played just constantly throughout the whole night. And it was a good one. I mean, it was cool because it was a rare kind of throwback song.
I know it is. You can tell at times, though, I don't know if they have to pay per play, but you could tell a couple of times it was probably cut out.
Yeah. But I was glad they left it in general on the network, because without it, you kind of get hurt on a show like
actually,
this.
The theme for 19 was Crack Addict by Limp Bizkit. It was not Roland. And then 20, it was a song by Drowning Pool and another song by Step Up by Drowning Pool and Touche by Godsmack. And then last year's theme song was another Big Time.
Yes.
And then Behind Those Eyes by Three Doors Down. So we haven't had a song this, you know, pop culture heavy and this catchy since My Way, which was beaten into our brains.
I kind of found it ironic that it's like the last non-Big Time Mania in many ways.
I know.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like it's funny that they used it this one where it's the last kind of, you know, old. It's the final old school regular Mania, just in a normal arena, not in a dome, not in a, you know, massive stadium.
Exactly. Yep.
So it's funny they consider this one Big Time. But speaking of Big Time, I got some notes here from Stephen J. Sutton. Would you like to hear those?
Do we want to do the open?
Oh, what's the open? Oh, do you do that first?
No, okay. We do. Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. I know. It seems like it's been a while. April 2nd, 2000. Big Time. April 2nd, 2000. We could sing the whole song. 2006, live from the Allstate Arena in Chicago, Illinois, or if you want to be really picky, schmuck, the borough of Rosemont, or whatever the hell it's called. Mm-hmm. Your attendance, pretty awesome, 17,159. Your buy rate, I mean, this buy rate's ridiculous, 2.33. Mm. That's ridiculous. Incidentally, JR, on our pay-per-view states nerdgasm tally, this is Illinois' 8th pay-per-view. Hmm. First one in Chicago since?
Where the hell are we? It's been a while, huh?
It's been quite a while. Quite a while, actually. Longer than I thought until I looked at my master list today.
Wasn't 13, was it?
No.
Okay.
There's been one since 13.
How many?
Actually, there's been a couple since 13.
Okay. What year?
01.
I don't know. You have to
Backlash.
Decide. Okay.
And actually, there was one after 13. Judgment Day 98 was there. But the last pay-per-view here was Backlash 01. And the city also takes the lead, JR. Well, it ties it, actually. This is its third WrestleMania. I don't know if any other city other than the Garden has three WrestleManias. So pretty iconic. Mm-hmm. And all in this building. Of course, it was a third of WrestleMania 2, probably the second best venue that night. You had the awesome Dream Team Bulldogs, and you had the Battle Royal. And then, of course, as JR mentioned, WrestleMania 13, which has arguably the greatest WrestleMania match of all time in Stone Cold and Bret. Your announcers, and we're going to talk about one of these announcers in a minute, because he's back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's back on pay-per-view. We talked to him. We've talked about him since No Way Out 06. Anyway, of course, our SmackDown announcers, Michael Cole and Taz, Jerry Lawler, Joey Styles is there. But who is the play-by-play guy?
Mr. Jim Ross.
What?
Made his return to lead play-by-play man since leaving Raw in September to deal with colon issues. While Joey Styles is the main man on Raw, there are many detractors in the back that believed he was not great at telling stories, and Doty requested their announcers to do so. So Vince began to lose faith in Joey's ability to carry a major show like WrestleMania, decided to bring Ross back to call the show. Ross made his first appearance, as we talked about last week, on Saturday Night's Main Event. Styles was rumored to have been embarrassed and felt like he was slighted to not be considered good enough to provide commentary on Mania, but for now he'd remain on Raw each week, and the kayfabe reason was that Mr. McMahon wanted Ross to call his humiliation of Shawn Michaels, which we'll get to later in the show. So, Scott, we actually have multiple theme songs on this night. It was Big Time by Peter Gabriel, of course. Mm-hmm. I Dare You by Shinedown. And
that's the one I remember. That's the one I half remember. I remembered a Shinedown song, but I didn't remember the name of it.
And then Save Me Now by Bullets and Octane. So there you go.
Never. I don't remember them playing that. Did they play that at the end? I don't remember where they played another song.
No, they played Big Time at the end. Tagline?
Big Time.
Very good.
Actually, they played two songs at the end.
Oh, so maybe it was the other one then.
Yeah, because they did like a montage with a song, and then they did the ending with Big Time. But I remember the Shinedown song.
Sponsor? Snickers is the sponsor.
Hmm.
Your Raw champion, John Cena, 63 days into his reign. Kurt Angle reigns atop SmackDown, 82 days in. Shelton Benjamin, 41 days into his Intercontinental Championship reign.
What?
He defeated Ric Flair on the February 20th edition of Raw from Trenton. Mm-hmm. Flair's reign had lasted 155 days. Chris Benoit's United States champion still, 42 days into his reign. Big Show and Kane, still your tag champs, back from Unforgiven, 152 days into theirs. Mm-hmm. Eminem, still your WWE tag team champions, 96 days into their reign.
Taboo Tuesday.
That's right, Taboo Tuesday. Trish Stratus, still women's champion, 488 days into
that's
her.
That's crazy.
So
yeah.
She's had it quite a while. Was it early 05, right? Was the
New Year's Revolution.
Right, so she's had it since then. Yep. Gregory Helms, still your Cruiserweight champion, 63
yes.
days.
Yes.
He surpassed 670 episodes of Raw, 346 of SmackDown. For the first time since 2004, Ring of Honor held shows during WrestleMania weekend. But the first time the promotion would run 2 days before the main show, won the night one. Dragon Gate won a three-match series over ROH. On night two, the show didn't finish till 5 to 1 in the morning. As Bryan Danielson retained the ROH championship over Roderick Strong in the first, also had the first Dragon Gate Trios match between Doofixer and Blood Generation. And night three, Lance Storm came out of retirement to take on Bryan Danielson and Colt Cabana. And to take on Bryan Danielson and Colt Cabana ended his bloody feud with Homicide in a Chicago street fight. So pretty big night there for the history of Ring
yes.
of Honor.
Yep.
We'll talk Hall of Fame later. We have some other news and notes we can discuss later as well. WrestleMania grossed $2.5 million in ticket sales.
That's big for a regular arena.
Yes,
know?
And more than 17,155 people from 16 countries, 43 states attended the event, with millions more watching on pay-per-view.
All right. We had one dark match, although it wasn't really a dark match. It was more like the match to,
It's like the T-shirt before the T-shirt on Jersey Shore. It's the match before the match before the match.
Match before the match.
Viscera won the Interpromotional Battle Royal.
Yes, and quick rundown. Those in the Battle Royal.
The world's largest love machine.
That's right. He won.
Big time.
Here were the guys in the Battle Royal. Simon Dean, Rob Conway, Funaki, Lance Cade, Steven Richards, Matt Stryker, Super Crazy, Goldberg. That's sticking of it.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be funny.
What a troll job.
William Regal, Eugene, Trevor Murdoch, Psychosis, Joey Mercury, Johnny Nitro, Tyson Tomko, The Road Warrior, which is, of course, Animal. Snitsky, and, of course, your winner, Viscera.
Snitsky. Crappy for Eminem getting stuck.
I was about to ask you that. Do you think it sucks that one belt, one pair of belts is on the show and the other's not?
Yeah, I would have done an interpromotional tag match here. Well, I don't know. Curly, I feel like Eminem's worked pretty hard over the last year. They probably deserved a slot somewhere. I mean, you're not going to have two tag title matches on Mania. That's not going to do it. But maybe they could have done something else.
Well, they could have had...
The chance retained anyway. You could have done like a Raw versus SmackDown and include those two teams. You know what I mean? You could have done like Show, Kane, Carlito, Masters against Eminem and two people from SmackDown or something.
Two baby faces. Yeah, I probably could have done that. All right. Why don't we get started? Our opener. It is the aforementioned World Tag Team Champions. Defending their titles against a couple of guys you just mentioned, JR, how did we get to this title match?
Well, it's a big time. On 1:30, Big Show and Kane defeated Carlito and Chris Masters to retain their tag team titles. And next week, Masters would pin Kane in a Road to WrestleMania tournament match. And 2 weeks later, Kane got revenge by pinning Masters in a rematch. On 3-6, Vince McMahon granted Carlito and Masters this tag title match at WrestleMania because they aided him in business with Shawn Michaels. Later that night, Masters and Carlito cost Kane a match with Triple H. The next week, Carlito Masters teamed with Triple H to battle Kane, Show, and John Cena. Carlito Masters would get their team disqualified when they paced to the champs with steel chairs. On 3:20, Kane defeated Carlito and Show defeated Masters in singles bouts. In the latter match, Masters hit Show with a chair, locking him in the full Nelson and then ramming him into the ring post. The next week, Kane beat Carlito by DQ, but he was lured backstage and jumped by Masters. Lance Cade and Trevor Murdoch. They would lock Kane in a room and barricade it with a forklift, but their plan backfired when Kane emerged from a different door.
Stupid.
There you go. Lots going on here. Yes. Yeah, so here we go. Tag title match. I've enjoyed Carlito Masters as a sneaky heel team. They play their roles real well. Mm-hmm. Masters, to me, has been kind of a revelation throughout all this rewatching that we've done. Some of that I knew got better later, but it kind of caught me off guard with how good he's been early on, and he's been really good in the ring. I think he's actually shined more than Carlito at times. Show and Kane are still dominating as champions, and actually their reign has been better than expected, I thought. They got some nice swag and confidence as they come down the aisle. Show's looking awful, though, again here.
Yeah, he is.
Just bloated, eyes sunken in, on death's doorstep, it looked like at times. Show and Kane used power strikes on Masters early, with Big Show hitting his trademark chops. I thought it was weird hearing JR again, but you kind of slide right back into it. Like, it took me a minute to, A, realize he'd been gone, and then realize he's back, you know, kind of thing.
Yep.
Show moves to Carlito, putting on a big power display. Carlito and Masters bail to the floor, but Kane comes off the top to dive onto both of them. Masters and Carlito use some trickery to finally slow down Show as they remove a turnbuckle and run Show into a low dropkick. Carlito and Masters try to double team, but Show swats it off and tags to Kane, who takes care of both guys. Masters reverses a Kane top rope clothesline by hooking the master lock at a pretty nice spot, but Show breaks up the hold, and the crowd actually gets behind Carlito Masters here. Carlito hits a backstabber on Kane, but then he walks into a choke slam, and then Masters makes a save with a clip. Kane fights off both guys. Eventually, Carlito and Masters collide, and Kane hits the choke slam for the win. I know this is kind of a sneaky, spunky little opener. The crowd stays in it. It's a pretty quick pace for big guys. It's short. The heat segment was short as well. I thought Carlito and Masters could have made good tag champs, but the story here is always about their inability to kind of be on the same page at the, you know, at the key moments of the match when it matters most. It happened at New Year's Revolution. It happened in the Rumble, and it happens here again, right? When they're on the precipice of something big, they do something stupid and collide or turn on each other, and they cost them. And, of course, Big Show and Kane's size played a big part here, too. They just overpowered them. But this is a fine opener. I mean, you know, it's not going to rank highly in a greatest opener list or anything like that, but it's perfectly serviceable considering who's in the match. I really thought they would have been better served to do I thought maybe to have the title switch here instead of what they end up doing the next night.
Yeah, three points here. Number one, I was going to use an old school 90s, maybe a We Are the 90s cartoon example, but I don't know if it totally fits this team, but Carlito and Masters almost remind me of like Ren and Stimpy, like the one smart one and the one dopey one, and then they always screw up.
No, isn't it more Pinky and the Brain?
I think we that's Pinky and the Brain. That was it. That's what I was thinking of, Pinky and the Brain. Yeah, and I don't think Ren and Stimpy would. Or I don't think Carlino and Masters pick their nose or anything like that. So, but the reason I use that example is that's what I think of them. Like Carlito's the wily little you know smart ass, and Masters is the weapon, if you will. Number two, this is the first match where you start to really feel the bizarro effect of the Chicago crowd. It's not just, in case you haven't watched in a while, just a reminder, it's not just the main event where things feel weird from the fans. They're loud. I mean, and they're loud through this whole show. Kudos to the 17,159 there, because they were loud the whole show. There was really, except for maybe the pillow fight, there was really no dead spots.
I get the idea of having Show and Kane open the show too, because, you know, they're big. They kind of fly around a little bit at times. At least Kane does. Show lands his big bombs. They're well respected, so it's almost a good slot for them, because, you know, first match usually you get a big pop anyway, so you're going to get the big recognition pop.
Mm-hmm.
It's a quick match. You can kind of keep things. So you know, a lot of times you think, oh, put the big high-flying match in here first to open up the show. But I thought this was, like, not a bad second choice.
No, I don't think so at all. And so point two for me is that this is an example of how this whole show is very bizarro with the fans. It's not just the main event where the weirdness in terms of energy towards certain guys comes in. And number three, I don't want to say it was a glorified squash. It wasn't a squash. I mean, Carlito and Masters did get some offense in, but it almost did feel like it, though. I kind of wish the match was a little more, I don't want to say balanced, because, I mean, obviously Masters and Carlito are not Big Show and Kane in terms of size. But instead of a lot of, I think they wasted a lot of the first 2 or 3 minutes with, oh, these two big guys get thrown around these little guys, and they really didn't give them.
I think the slot on the show dictated to have a quick heat segment. I don't think you wanted to bog down the opener. If you look throughout Mania history, you have one or two type of openers usually. You have like an epic, like a Bret Owen, mm-hmm. or you have kind of a quick sprinty kind of match. You know, rarely a long heat segment. Usually the face makes a quick comeback, like a Coco Martel, a Hercules Haku, Sean and Tito Santana. You know, I mean, like a lot of those matches, even Sean Tatanka. Like, Sean doesn't dominate a lot of that match. So usually the openers, even, you know, Allied Powers, Blue Brother. You know, if you look at the style of openers in Mania history, this kind of blends right in, where you don't have that long heat segment with the heels. I mean, maybe they could have had an extra minute in there, but I don't know. For what it is, if they're not going to win, like, whatever, you know.
Right.
They're going to lose clean, they're going to lose clean, whether they get 3 minutes of heat segment or 5 minutes. So I don't.
True. No, I agree. I thought they'd look a little bit tougher than just, because I almost feel like they went in as, like, this comical heel underdogs. But you make a good point in terms of openers. It's you either have something where you're going in with it being epic, Bret Owen, you know, Eddie Ray, that kind of thing. Or you get a match where you want to get the fans off to a hot start with a babyface win and just move on to more important stuff. So it's a good point. But you definitely feel the crowd kind of cheering for Carlito Masters. They're likable. I don't say they're likable heels. At least Carlito is. And I think that would lead to an eventual face turn down the line, I guess. But even Masters got some pops. And I think it's just because, I don't want to say people were sick of Kane and Show at this point. I mean, if we had Jordan Duncan on, we could say people were sick of him for, you know, 12 years, but, they're so standard in terms of guys on the roster that I think fans were digging Carlito and Masters. And what the hell? Have them win the straps. Who cares? You know? They're used to elevate anyway. So I think people were a little disappointed in the result. I think they wouldn't have minded kind of a heel upset. But at the same time, like you said, things happen the next night on Raw, which we'll get into at the next vault. That tonight wouldn't have made a difference anyway. But it was okay. It served its purpose. Got the crowd fired up and you know, a happy moment to begin. So Kane and Big Show retain their World Tag Team Championships with a win over Carlito and Chris Masters. I believe we go backstage, and I think Coach talks to Shawn Michaels, I believe, right? I believe that's the next...
I didn't have it noted here, but it sounds okay. All right.
No, yeah, I do remember Coach coming up, and he talks to Shawn, and Shawn's very, like, very different. He says, tonight's not about... Right. He even says it. He's almost very... Very IWC-ish. He's like, this isn't about 5-star matches for me. Tonight it's about violence, meaning this is not 5 stars. This isn't me and Kurt last year, so don't shit all over it. It was almost like a preemptive strike against the snarkers, not to get all pissed off that this isn't going to be 5 stars kind of thing. But
I don't think anyone expected.
No, I don't think so either. But wait till we get to that.
But at least they established the goal that it's going to be a sloppy, you know, garbage match.
Correct. Next up, we have what is becoming now, this for the second year, a WrestleMania tradition, JR, and that is our Money in the Bank ladder match. Tell us, JR, who the 6 participants are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, astute listeners of the show will know who one of them is, and that is the Nature
right.
Boy Ric Flair.
That is
but
right.
In February, Carlito suggested to Mr. McMahon that they bring back Money in the Bank for this year's WrestleMania, like we saw last year when it debuted. McMahon approved the idea, and qualifying matches were set up on both Raw and SmackDown. In the bouts, Rob Van Dam advanced by defeating Trevor Murdoch. Shelton Benjamin knocked off Chavo Guerrero. Ric Flair beat Carlito. Finley defeated Bobby Lashley. Matt Hardy defeated Road Warrior Animal. And Lashley won a last chance battle royal to get in, even though he lost earlier. Carlito suggests a match and doesn't even get in.
I know.
Like we mentioned earlier, Shelton Benjamin defeated Mr. Ric Flair.
Open up the heaven.
To win the Intercontinental Championship on the 220 Raw. Shelton won the match after his mama faked a heart attack and distracted Flair. Shelton would claim that mama had surgery and held Flair responsible for the malady. And, of course, Shelton's mama would not be seen again. So,
thank God.
There you go. That's it. One of your favorites. Gone like that. Blink of an eye. Large shoes to fill, Scott, for this Money in the Bank coming off last year's near-perfect edition.
I know.
Great match. And kind of a different mix. Last year they had, like, kind of veterans in their prime, and this year we have a mix of either Raw guys or old guys. Guys. So Cole thinks Matt Hardy's a favorite due to his ladder match experience. I thought it's a good call having Shelton back in the match as well. Cool spot for Finley to be in. RVD back in the mix full time. Another good choice for this type of match. Odd for Lashley. I thought he would have been better in some kind of semi squash. Maybe that match we mentioned earlier, they could have done the SmackDown versus Raw.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you have him there instead, you know? Instead of this match here. But anyway, Flair continues his rebirth as a garbage wrestler. I thought it was cringy to watch due to a lot of it lately, especially the stuff with Edge back in January. But here we go. We'll hold our breath and hope for the best.
Yeah.
Lashley uses his power off the bell, but he gets knocked down and the ladders start coming into play. RVD gets the first big spot of the match as he hits a crossbody onto a ladder and Hardy on the floor. Shelton gets a fantastic running senton by charging up the ladder and floating into the crowd. Flair on the floor. Flair takes a superplex off the top of the ladder in a real gross spot, and he seemingly hurts his leg. So the referee calls for the X sign, and Flair leaves. Nasty, stupid bump. I don't get why they needed Flair to do this shit like this. I mean, you could have just hit him in the face of the ladder and did the same thing. You really need him taking a mega bump off the top of a ladder with his, like, you know, notoriously bad back.
Mm.
What did you think of the spot? Was it worth it?
It was dumb. It was dumb. Because you got to remember, everyone has to remember, Flair lands, I mean, for those that have been watching Flair for years and years, like all of us, if you notice, Flair lands a certain way because of the back that he suffered. And, you know, I know October 4th, 1975 is a long time ago, but, you know, it was a plane crash. It wasn't like he, you know, tripped or something. He lands a certain way because of that. So to not have control over falling is stupid.
Right.
Dumb. There was no need for it. Bad enough that he's been bleeding pints and pints of blood for the last 6 months for various reasons. To do something like that where he can't totally control his fall is ignorant. Utterly ignorant.
Well, at least have him get, like, put through a table. You know what I mean? Like, if you need to do something, I don't know. The last thing he needed was to get thrown off the freaking ladder.
Yeah, let's put it this way. If you're going to have him fall, exactly, whether it's table or not, don't make the fall so high. Right. If he falls off the apron onto a table, fine. It's only like a, you know, 5 foot
or
drop.
Just lay him on a table and have like Matt splash him through it. You know what I mean? Like something that's kind of protected. This was just like,
yeah, it was ignorant for a 57-year-old Hall of Famer, future Hall of Famer as he is, one of the greatest of all time. 57 right. is 57.
Yep.
So,
and you would know. All four doing commentary. doing commentary.
You really had to wait that long. That was a Rotella gap right there.
That is fine.
Oh, that is fine. Oh, my God. You did it yesterday. I'll spit my coffee out. Go ahead.
All four, I thought, guys doing commentary pretty seamlessly here. Lashley has time alone, but he's real hesitant climbing the ladder. It looks like Jim when he's trying to get out of the truck. He gets caught and knocked back to the ground. Shelton tries a sunset flip powerbomb and then gets help from Matt Hardy and Finley to finish the move. Crowd is behind RVD for most of this. Finley starts doing damage with the ladder. And then angry, reckless abandon with that. Ring clears out, and Flair hobbles his way back out. Starts climbing, but Hardy yanks him down. Flair fights him and Shelton off and gets it close to the case for a big pop, but Finley cracks him with the shillelagh and knocks him back down. Lashley uses a ladder to stop Hardy and Shelton and then hits a Dominator on Shelton. Lashley climbs, but RVD comes in and dropkicks a chair into him and knocks him off. Hardy hits a leg drop off the ladder into Lashley and then climbs, but Finley catches him. Matt takes Finley down with a side effect off the ladder. RVD then hits the five-star frog splash off the ladder into Finley. RVD climbs alone, but Shelton springboards onto the ladder out of nowhere in front of some fantastic camera work, just flying into the picture. We get a big scrum to climb up the two ladders with RVD, Shelton, and Hardy. Hardy and Shelton take a nasty bump to the floor, and RVD grabs the case to win to a huge pop. I thought it was a really good match. Obviously, a step behind last year, and I think it was just going to happen anyway because last year was so, so good. Plenty of good stuff in here. It was well worked despite the odd mix of guys. A good win for RVD, you know, getting back on track after his year off. Another that kind of surprised many who thought he'd hit the glass ceiling, especially after him getting hurt and kind of his time seems to have passed, but they're giving him the shot here. That was hard work. Great effort from all. I could have done without the flare bump, and I thought Shelton looked like a star again, too. So I liked the match. It was really good, just a notch below last year's.
I agree. 3 points. Number one, I feel it was neat to see. I'll do that point, too. Point one, I feel it was pretty cool to see Finlay and Flair in the ring together for some reason. Like, and they never had really any history. I don't remember them really wrestling against each other in WCW at all. But just seeing the two of them together, these two old grizzled veterans, was kind of neat with all this young, with all this youth around them. So I thought that was kind of neat. Just a visual. Number two, I kind of felt bad. Now, he should have been ready, but I almost felt a little bit bad for Lashley because I feel like he was, I don't want to say ill-prepared, but for a guy who hasn't really been in the spotlight that long, I feel like this match was a little over his head.
I agree. I don't think he didn't need to be in there at all. I think they stuck him in there to give him something to do. I would have taken Finlay out, too, and just ran Lashley-Finlay. I would have squeezed it into the card somewhere.
And had Lashley, yeah, maybe
and he could have thrown Eminem in this match. That's where he could use them.
Yeah, they'd have been fantastic. You could have put, you know what you could have done? You could have done like the, because they lost, you know, they wrestled each other at No Way Out and Lashley lost. You could have had like a Belfast brawl or something.
Lashley lost to JBL and Finlay.
Oh, that's right.
Finlay
that's
cost
right.
him. So it sets it up. I would have done Finlay, let Lashley pin Finlay clean here and then throw Eminem in the Money in the Bank. I think that that improves the card overall. Yeah. I mean, Finley's fun in this match, but to me, Lashley, it was a complete waste of what he's been doing. Give him the win over Finlay, throw Eminem in this match, and you improve things.
Yeah, I don't think he was totally aware of how he could have handled this match. You know, he's a straight-up power guy, little green. So I think this match was a little over his head. I actually felt bad for him. I feel like he was put in there because of his star power when really they should have told him, you know what? Probably not ready for something like this yet. Why don't we give you this? And then as time progresses, maybe next year, if you're around, we'll put you in the Money in the Bank next year. Cause this, I just think he seemed a little awkward at times. He didn't have his moment like the other guys did. And number three, and I thought long and hard about this for a while since we've been preparing for the show. This is a theory of mine. I contend, and I'm curious your thoughts, and I'm actually curious, Place Me Nation, when you finish listening to this, you know, please post some comments on Facebook or, I'm curious people's thoughts. I contend that if the storyline hadn't dictated who won this match, you know, the storyline that we would have over the next, you know, 4 months, I contend that Ric Flair would have won the Money in the Bank. They mentioned he was old, you know, he was older. They mentioned 57-year-old future Hall of Famer, blah, blah. Coach mentioned it a lot on Raw leading up to this point. And I think he could have had an epic storyline.
Yeah.
This guy, you know, the veteran, one of the greatest ever, one more shot.
And I think he just did that with Edge, though.
He did, but I feel like it was tossed away because it was a Raw feud. And
yeah. I think if you didn't do that with Edge, like, he just had his big title shot. Like, if you had him come out of nowhere and didn't do the Edge thing, I could maybe get on board.
But the only reason I think they didn't do it is because RVD, and look, I'm also not discounting RVD. RVD's a fine pick, but take away what is going to happen with the company between now and, you know, the end of June. I contend that I don't know where RVD would have fit. I mean,
I don't know if that was even decided yet. I think the bigger thing was that they had that in mind to sell the show in June. Not even just the return of TV. I'm talking about the pay-per-view.
Possibly. But, I mean, I think there was an added bonus to him having this belt and, quote, the other belt, which, of course, we'll get more into down the line. I just think that it was set up better storyline-wise for RVD. But if this was just a standalone like the year before, a standalone Money in the Bank with regular kind of straight-up Raw SmackDown storylines, I think for nostalgia and for interesting television, I think it would have been pretty cool for Flair to win the Money in the Bank. Just my opinion. I'm not upset RVD won. Not at all. I'm just saying that I think RVD won simply because the storylines and the creative between now and the end of June dictated him fitting in this spot. Could have given him the title shot down the line regardless. But anyway, that's just an opinion. I'm curious to see what some listeners think about that. If they think that's that would have been an option. But having said that, the match is very good. I think it's a notch below simply for the players. I mean, you know, Ric Flair, Finlay, those guys can't flip around like Benoit can, or who else was in the match last year that wasn't in this year, or Edge. You know, they can't do that kind of stuff. And Matt Hardy is not his brother, who, of course, isn't with the company at the time. But Jeff is more, his moveset is more conducive to this type of match, where Matt's really isn't. He's like the power guy of the brothers. But, I mean, he was fine. But I think the slower guys kind of plotting, they might have wanted to book it a little differently and make it more of a bludgeoning Money in the Bank rather than a flip-flop and fly Money in the Bank. But that's fine.
Well, last year was kind of that way. Last year wasn't a lot of flying around. Because you look at the guys around last year. They were hard-hitting kind of.
Yeah, but I mean, you still had more guys. I mean, Benoit's not a high flyer, but he's younger than Finlay. I mean, if you need him to. But, I mean, again, if last year's was 5 stars, this is like, to use Keith's rankings, what, maybe 3 3/4 probably?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think,
but
I think we're already seeing the
because you and I don't use quarters, that's why I use Keith as an example.
I know, like, but I mean, everyone but us,
I know. You keep haranguing that point, but that's all right.
It aggravates me to know that we didn't the this, you know, I prefer par of to the 3 1/4 quarters. I think we're already starting to see the pitfall, though, with the fact that they're like just squeezing everyone who's left over into the match. Like that becomes a thing as we move along, and it almost starts here, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway,
this is the only one I think, though, where it's noticeable. Some of the other ones they may do it, but at least the guys fit. But we'll get into that when we get into every Mania. All right. So RVD, Rob Van Dam, who everyone thought was pretty much forgotten after he got hurt, is your Money in the Bank winner, and he holds the briefcase. Now, the key thing here, JR, is last year's Money in the Bank was a heel, and we saw what Edge did with it. As a babyface, what's RVD going to do with it? Is he going to be? God only knows what he's hiding in it besides comic books, but
the Highway Patrol finds out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let me guess. The combination is 420. I think that. I'm curious. At the time, I was curious to see what a babyface would do with it. Would he do what Edge did and sneak in at the end of a match? We'll
and
see.
Nobody knows it. But is that the babyface that you're talking about?
Love babyface.
I don't know what he would do with the briefcase. Remember he was on 90210? He sang at the...
that's right.
David Silver, him sang at the carnival.
That's right. Why isn't that show on some streaming? We don't need like every...
They are. I thought they're on Hulu. They're not on there anymore?
No, they're not all of them. They like select episodes. It's a lot of them, but not all of them.
I bet Babyface is on there. He's a king.
He is a king.
All right, we go backstage. Randy Orton interrupts Gene Okerlund, who stops off when Orton comes in. Batista then shows up and tells Orton that whoever wins that world title tonight is just holding it for him. So, little tease again, just like last month.
Yep.
We go back to the ring where the Fink comes out, and it went like the biggest like fuck you to the fans. Bret Hart was uncomfortable staying for the show. We'll be it's like everyone thinks he's like introducing him to come out, and then he basically says he's not there. It's like this great tease.
It's like when you were at those house shows in like 92, 93. The following superstars could not make it to the show.
I know. I was like, what the? But the way he did it was like a real dick tease. Like Bret the Hitman Hart was uncomfortable coming live to the arena and will not be here. He has already flown home.
That absolutely aggravated me to no. Well, go through the whole segment.
Odd because the crowd cheers and then boos, you know. But then, so we get everyone that comes out. Big pop a chant for Eddie, of course, and the class. It's in as a whole. Bret Hart, of course, is inducted by Steve Austin. Eddie Guerrero inducted by Chavo Guerrero. Chris Benoit, Rey Mysterio. Mean Gene inducted by Hulk Hogan. Mr. USA, Tony Atlas, inducted by Special Delivery Jones. Sensational Sherry, inducted by Ted DiBiase. The Blackjacks, inducted by Bobby the Brain Heenan. Refrigerator Perry, inducted by John Cena. And Vern Gagne, inducted by his son Greg. And, of course, a lot swirling with Brett on this weekend. So a lot of dirt sheets said Brett even stayed at a completely different hotel than the rest of the promotion, and that Shawn Michaels and his wife didn't stay for Brett's induction speech, leaving to a mixed reaction of "You screwed Brett" and "HBK chants." I remember that. Mm-hmm. I think Shawn said, did he say later it's because he didn't want to be a distraction or something? Wasn't that part of the reasoning that he did it?
Yep, yep. And I don't blame him. Yeah. I mean, I understand being respectful because it's – you want to give Brett his moment, and you don't know how fans are going to react. I mean, we know that. I mean, 7 years later, we would see it at the Garden. But I don't. I'm not totally pissed off with that part of it. There's other things though, but I understood the thinking if that was a case.
So a lot of the rumors were, of course, the original hope was that Brett was going to stick around and play a role in this match. Vince was hoping he could, and I think he was confident he could convince him to be the referee for this match. That was what you always heard. Mm-hmm. And Brett refused, saying he didn't want to be part of any storyline. And, you know, he was basically just doing the Hall of Fame for his fans to say goodbye to his fans. And I don't think, and well, it's two reasons. One, he wanted to, you know, eliminate the Hatchet Job DVD that was planned. And he didn't want that to be his lasting legend with the company. So he came back to do the DVD right and then accepted the Hall of Fame induction kind of as a farewell. He was not planning on getting involved in storylines in any way. And I think partially, I'm guessing he left. His word is he stayed at a different hotel and then he flew out like the morning of Mania. So he wasn't even in Chicago. And I think part of it was probably to protect himself against himself from like caving at the last minute and showing up. I'm guessing he did it just to get out of there and, you know, put it out of his mind.
Mm.
In retrospect, I'm curious, you know, looking back at everything, obviously he's done with the company since. It would take almost 4 years, but he would eventually come back in the fold on a, you know, pretty much full-time basis. It was surprising, or would you be surprised? Do you think he regrets what he did here, or do you think mentally he just wasn't in the place yet to make this work and he needed that additional time to come to grips with everything? Or do you think he looks back at this and kind of says, maybe I should have just stuck around?
What I would have done, well, he was the main event guy of the class. So if he decided to show up, he would have had to go last. Even though deep down he probably would have thought, you know, it'd probably be better if, you know, Vicky went last so we can really give Eddie the respect and honor he deserves. Having said that though, you know, I love you, Brett. Get over yourself. I mean, seriously, what do you have to come to grips with? All right, it's been 9 years. All right. Your career's over anyway. You're retired. You have nothing to be, you know, you have nothing to regret in your career. Get over it. Sean did. Vince probably did. No one's going to screw you. So why be all weird? I don't know. Maybe. I don't know if he did any shoot interviews between now and when he came back in 2010, but I don't understand. I don't get it. Why do you got to be?
I think he just saw it as a principle thing. Like I think he didn't want to be seen as selling out. I mean, he felt that he talked a lot of shit and he still felt the same. He, you know, accepted Vince's apology basically just to do it, just to put that part behind him. He did the DVD, Hall of Fame. You know, I don't think he felt like he needed to be on screen anymore at this point. Like, I don't think he wanted to help them do business in his mind. And I don't think he wanted to, at the time, I don't think he wanted to turn his life, like a big moment in like Montreal in his life, into like a storyline, from what I recall at that time.
Maybe.
I think he felt like he was cheapening what happened if he just turns into a storyline. There was still, I mean, you know, 06, you can't look at it through a 16 lens. You know what I mean? So you're going to look at 06 in an 06 lens. And a lot of that stuff, like, was still kind of fresh. I know it was like 9 years old, but Owen was only 7 years before that. And the lawsuit and Dragon Stew on a Raw, like, all that stuff was still pretty recent. And, you know, Vince was really a D-bag at that point still, you know, with everything we've seen on TV. The company was still in the attitude. I don't know. Like, I feel like maybe I could see why Brett didn't feel far enough removed from everything that happened.
Well, then I'll ask you this, because Brett, as we've known, is not one of those kind of guys who does anything half and half. Mm. So why accept the Hall of Fame at all?
Well, I told you why. He wanted to come back for the DVD. because he didn't want the Warrior DVD treatment where they butcher the shit. And that was planned. They were going to do the destruction of Bret Hart. Like, that was the DVD that was planned. And they basically said, you can come back and save it, or we're going to do it without you. So he came back.
I got to be honest with you. I don't know if they ever would have.
It was planned. It was definitely being planned. It was ready to go. They were definitely going to. Look at the Warrior one. Got a ton of pub, and they did that. They were definitely going to do the Bret one.
Yeah.
And they convinced him to come back because they basically said, we're going to run this if you don't come back and do your own. I'm pretty sure that's been corroborated out there. And I think the Hall of Fame was him.
No, I'm not saying it's. I'm not saying that it wasn't happened. No, I didn't. I just think it was a bluff. I don't think that. They may have said that they were going to do it, but I don't know deep down they really would have done it. Bret's different because Bret is. Warrior was a. If you go through the history of Warrior to that point, Warrior's backstage story, backstage history is pretty douchey. What he did before SummerSlam 91 and then bugging out in 96. He doesn't have at the time, he didn't have a lot of fans in that aspect. Everything was pretty much one. Yeah, everything was pretty much one sided.
Nah, I don't know. I
don't know if. Would fans have really bought a Destruction of Bret Hart DVD?
Yeah, just to see how bad they hacked him up.
Yeah, but I think the company, I think a lot of the roster would have been a little pissed off at that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think
they would have done it. I think they were going to do it. I don't think they cared at that point. They were on the warpath to rip people. Look what they did to Jim Ross. They did it to Warrior. They kind of trashed Austin when he walked out. You know, like they've been doing it. I wouldn't have put it past them. I think it was going to be done. I think they did it partially to bait Bret in. And I think Vince saw for sure once he had him hooked that he'd get him back in for these storylines. And I think Bret, out of principle, said, no, you're not going to use me to come back and just do angles. I'm coming here to do two things: protect my DVD, my legacy, and to, you know, pay tribute to my fans at the Hall of Fame. And I want to come up. I want to talk about my family. I want to pay respect to them. I want to pay respect to my career. Let my fans know. Remember, even in the speech, he's like, "You can not worry about me. I'm okay. I'm fine. You know, thank you for having me back, and that's it." You know, like he basically, it was almost you. It's like he was using it as a farewell speech. Like he knew. I don't think he wanted to get sucked back into the business. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He wanted to protect his legacy, but not get dragged back in for, at the time, what was kind of toxic for him. If you look at everything that happened, you know, his family all dying, the stroke, you know, getting kicked in the head, screw job. It was a very toxic environment. Like, I can't blame him for, you know, within 7 years of his brother being killed to, you know, not want to come back into that situation yet.
I think there would have been a lot of public backlash if they released a hatchet job on Bret.
I don't think the company cared. They wanted that. They wanted that backlash. So they were all look at all the stuff they were doing. It was all edgy attitude. It's not now, you know, it's not in the Linda years. It's not now where they so much as riding on the stock and all that. I don't know. At the time, they didn't seem to put much behind that. Like I think they invited that kind of controversy at that point.
Mm. Controversy is one thing, but downright dirt kicking in the face of a guy. Like I said,
What makes you think of everything they've done to everyone else that they're above kicking dirt in the face of Bret Hart? They've done
because
how
Bret
many
Hart
Montreal
is a different
knockoffs
guy.
Between because then Bret, and even this point? Because the whole Shawn Michaels storyline was around Bret being screwed.
Well, because they were baiting, B-A-D, baiting him to try and come back. I don't know why they bothered.
Well, because they were trying to sell tickets. What do you mean why they
Vince must have been doing other things besides the steroids leading up to the storyline, because none of this makes any sense whatsoever. To try and...
Yeah, of course. Debate him in for WrestleMania. Bret Hart returns to referee Shawn Michaels versus Vic McMahon.
Right, but to say...
You don't see why they wouldn't do that?
But to say we want you to come back, and if you don't come back, we're going to trash your shitty legacy on a DVD, which we all know is a big lie. And the fans know that. See, I disagree with you.
I don't think they would trash his legacy. They weren't going to call him a loser. I think they were just going to, like, you know, talk about Montreal, do more of the Bret screwed Bret. Oh, his career went to the shit in WCW. You know, I think they were going to do that kind of stuff. I think they were going to spotlight Bret's, like, 97 self-destruction. I think that was what the goal would have been. Right. We're spending way too much time on this. We could do a whole show on it.
I agree. But my point is, there is a silver lining to this. Like, if the Hall of Fame segment was ruined by it, then we could keep talking about it. But the fact remains is the best part about it was it gave more shine to Eddie, which is really what needed to be done anyway. So I'm fine with it in that. I just think Bret could have come out and then left and not come back. He could tell Vince, I'm going to come out, I'm going to wave to the thing.
It's easy to say, but I mean, I'm thinking in his mind, he's like, oh, if I go there, I'm backstage, I have all these guys are going to start talking to me, I'm going to get swept up, and here I'm, next thing I know, I'm going to be out there punching Vince in the ring to do the storyline. I think he just didn't want to do it. I mean, he's, you know, to this point in his life, had stuck to his guns.
I think he has.
And I think all this is moot. Anyway, I don't think Montreal is really the trigger here, because I think he would have been back by now if Owen hadn't died. Like, I don't think Montreal was as big of an issue. I mean, there's word that he was looking to maybe come back anyway already, like in 99 before Owen died. That's what really, you know, stuck the dagger in the relationship, in my eyes anyway. I think he would have gotten past Montreal and come back, I think, by this point.
Well, then that makes, I hate to say it, but that kind of makes his, the whole Heart and Soul DVD, the family one that came out well after his, even worse then, because according to that, the family had already forgiven by 2000. They had already, like,
yeah, not him and Martha. That's fault. The whole thing. Remember, he talks about all in the book and everything.
I don't know. I also think it's more Sean too than Vince.
Yeah, partially. But I think they were kind of okay by then. When did they bury the hatchet? Well, I thought they did around here.
January 2010.
Oh, they didn't do it before then?
No. That was the Raw.
I don't mean on TV. All right, let's go. We got a lot to talk about. Enough.
Well, no, I don't think they did it before that. When did that DVD come out? Well, it came out in 2010.
That was 2010.
Yeah. Well, anyway, whatever. The point is, the one thing Brett not showing up did do was give Eddie more shine, and that's what mattered more than anything
else. So. What do we got next? That's enough.
Yeah. All right.
Enough of Brett.
Next up, we have our next title match of the evening, JR. Second one of the evening, the United States Championship is on the line. Your champion, as we mentioned, Chris Benoit, who finally rid himself of Booker T with a win at No Way Out, taking on a guy who we never thought would have a belt feud again. How do we get here?
On 224, Chris Benoit and JBL were on opposite sides of a six-man tag match. During the bout, Benoit trapped JBL's hand behind the ring steps and kicked them, breaking JBL's hand in the process. The next week, we saw footage of JBL's surgery to repair the hand. It was announced he had two would meet at WrestleMania. On March 24th, the two were set to compete in a non-title match, but JBL backed out, citing his broken hand and an alleged broken nose that he claimed happening during a Steve Austin assault at the Saturday's Main Event. And remember, we saw that in the blood.
Yep.
He would name William Regal as his replacement, but Benoit would win the match. By 3:31, JBL's hand had healed, and he told Benoit he would take his gold, just as he had done to his friend Eddie Guerrero. So Benoit's had a solid U.S. championship, you know, out of the Booker feud. JBL's broken hand by Benoit was, I thought everything was built up real well. JBL was, again. Seemed to me that he was just going to put Benoit over and then roll on. That's what I expected coming into this. The JBL entrance was real cool here when the stage lifts up and he drives out from under it.
Mm-hmm.
Benoit goes for the crossface almost immediately, but JBL fought through it the best he could. Benoit pummels him with headbutts, but JBL comes back and grinds him down with a headlock. Benoit wriggles free and pounds JBL on the back of the head and the neck. Super stiff strikes here to this point. JBL looking real flabby, by the way, as well.
Yes.
JBL slips to the floor, uses Jillian as interference to gain control. JBL lays in some stiff kicks and punches, some receipts, in a really nasty match so far. JBL misses a charge in the corner. Benoit hits a triple Germans. Benoit gets caught up on top, and JBL mocks Eddie Guerrero shuffle and hits a nice superplex. The crowd rallies Benoit as he survives a cover. We get more Guerrero mocking by JBL as he shimmies and hits two of the three amigos, but Benoit blocks the third, kicks him to the mat, and goes to a chin lock. Benoit breaks free, hits three amigos to a big pop himself. Benoit hits a headbutt for a near fall, and then ducks clothesline from hell and goes for a German, but JBL grabs onto the ref and the rope to block it. Benoit dodges another clothesline from hell and locks on the crossface as the crowd goes crazy. JBL then rolls through and hooks the rope to steal the win and the title. I thought this felt like a real upset at the time. In retrospect, it makes sense because JBL is such a good heel in this role, and Benoit really didn't need the belt, even though everyone was still kind of bitter that, you know, he had dropped down to where he is. It was a fun, hard-hitting match. It's worked with a really stiff style. And I remember being really upset at the time and surprised, but looking back, it all kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah, 3 points. Number one, JBL was starting to let himself go a little bit. It's pretty clear there. Number two, Jillian was looking pretty smoking. She definitely sexed herself up after the whole eating the mole thing. And number three, it was definitely an upset, and I have a theory about what to do with Benoit after this feud.
I could think of a few theories of what should have been done, Benoit.
Well, that too, but Well, yeah, maybe 3A and 3B. 3A, you could see it in his eyes. He was pretty much becoming a pharmaceutical zombie at that point. His eyes were dark. He was all like, I don't know. He was getting ripped up again. It was beginning here. Now that you really pay attention, nobody's paying attention at that point, but you know, but when you really look at it, yeah. I thought at the time that Benoit was dropping the belt because they were going to turn him heel as a potential opponent for, say, Batista or whoever on, or Ray or whoever on SmackDown. That's what I thought. I thought it had more to do with the future of Benoit's character than it did JBL. Mm. I thought he was dropping the strap. He hadn't been a heel since 2002, and he would have been a guy that could have put over a lot of good baby faces at this point. And he'd have been a good heel champion. So that was my reasoning why I thought JBL won this match, was because I thought they were maybe going to turn Benoit heel and have him be a good opponent for, say, whoever won the match on this night and et cetera down the line. So that's what I thought. But the match was pretty stiff. You knew both guys could get away with it and neither would care because that's just how they work. Mm-hmm. But JBL needed to, you know, hit the treadmill. He was never a svelte guy anyway, but he
I don't think it was that. Isn't this, we'll see in the next couple of months, wasn't his back all jacked up? Wasn't that preventing him from working out? Wasn't that the whole thing?
Yes, and
because that's probably why his physical shape goes to shit fast, and I'm pretty sure it's his back was screwed up. Yeah, and that's why he stops.
He stops, but we'll get more into that down the
line. Yeah, but no, so, I like this. It was hard hitting. I mean, they really stiffed each other pretty good.
Yeah, they did.
This.
They did.
Yeah, no, I mean, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fine. Again, I was surprised at the time, but in retrospect, looking back, not as much of a surprise. So,
So JBL, your new United States champion, first belt for him since losing a year ago to John Cena in Los Angeles. So JBL, your new United States champion. Was this at what point did they go? Because I know they point him out later in the show, but at one point they're talking to JR and King. It wouldn't have been this match. It must have been after the Money in the Bank. And for some reason, you see Joe Theismann in the background. And I thought it was funny that he just stands up and like, holy, and I noticed that today. I'm like, that's Joe Theismann. It's kind of weird. And then they end up pointing him out later in the show. Hmm. But I thought that was weird. It's like, all of a sudden he stands up. Holy shit, that's Joe Theismann. It was just really strange. It was very random.
Well, it might have been here because this is where Joey Styles comes out.
Might have been here.
To announce the next match. They kind of throw him the bone. Because it's a hardcore match, they bring him out, truck him out here, and say, okay, you can at least call one match on the show.
And,
boy.
Yeah. Our next match gives one guy a chance to make a moment.
Gives Love a bad name.
Shot through the heart, big time. Gives a guy a chance for a big match that a lot of people thought he got screwed over the last couple months. And another guy who, you know, needed to put somebody else over, which is what he was pretty good at the last few years of his career. How do we get here, JR?
On 216, Edge received a title rematch against John Cena with Mick Foley serving as guest referee. Edge lost that bout and then proceeded to blame Foley for it, and he and Lita would assault Mick after the bell. The following week, Edge challenged Foley to a WrestleMania match and gave him 1 week to answer the call. A week later, Foley showed up but told Edge he had nothing to prove. Edge began taunting Foley, talked about Foley's less than stellar Mania history, contrasting that with Edge's perfect record. Foley would agree that he always wanted one shining Mania moment, but told Edge he did not want a wrestling match. Instead, he wanted a hardcore match. Mm. Foley then charged the ring with a barbed wire baseball bat, chasing Edge and Lita into the crowd. On March 6th, Lita and Edge were picking on Maria in the ring when Mick made the save. Edge would end up spearing Foley and then cracked him with a concerto before accepting Foley's challenge. The next week, Edge played a great video package mocking Foley's pathetic Mania history while highlighting his own. On Saturday's main event, Foley was a guest on the Cutting Edge. He emptied a bag of thumbtacks in the ring, but Edge would knock him into them, and Foley would recover and chase Edge up the ramp, hitting him with a neck breaker and then cracking him with a concerto of his own. The two continued to verbally duel over the next 2 weeks, really building up some nice heat for this war. And of course, these two guys were pretty friendly going back to the Attitude Era. If you remember, you know, Foley speaks very highly of these, of Edge, Christian, and the Hardys all in his book as they were kind of coming up. All the, you know, Commissioner Foley stuff with Edge and Christian was a big part of that, you know, 2000. So these guys are close friends. And they're kind of using each other here because Edge, after getting knocked out of the world title picture, we talked about this last week at Saturday's Main Event, you know, kind of had to find some other hook to make his Mania worthwhile, and Foley uses Edge to try and finally get that big Mania moment for himself. That one, you know, great match that he's never really had. You know, 2004 at 20, you know, was his best to date. That was a really good match, but he still doesn't have that great singles performance. So he's looking for that. So hardcore rules set up, I thought, made a lot of sense here. We bring out Joey Styles. Feels like a bit of a slap in some ways. And then, they make the joke about him popping his Mania cherry or whatever. Big pop for Foley. Good anticipation for the match. Edge tries to use the bat right away, but Foley dodges and starts hammering away at him and then bashes Edge in the tree of woe. Lita starts to get involved, handing Edge weapons to use as he bashes Foley with a cookie sheet and the sign. Edge hits a spear but drops and rides in pain as Foley takes off his flannel and reveals that he had his gut wrapped in barbed wire. I thought that was a really cool spot. A moment as he baited Edge in to do the spear. Edge has the arm is all bloodied from the wire. Edge gets tied in the ropes as Lita tries to free him. Foley takes them both to the floor with an old-school cactus clothesline. Foley picks up a near fall on the floor as well. Edge dodges a charging Foley and takes him to the steps with a hip toss. Edge ends puts Foley on the table and heads up top, but Foley rolls away before he jumps. Edge snaps Foley back headfirst onto the ramp in a very gnarly spot. Edge brandishes lighter fluid, but Foley smacks him and hits a great pile driver for a near fall. Lita tries to come in, but Foley chases her off and then turns a DDT into a baking sheet. Then bulldogs Edge in the barbed wire bat. Foley's busted open. Edge empties a bag of tacks, but Foley backdrops him into them in an awesome spot for a big pop. Huge props to Edge for taking that barebacked. Barebacked. Foley gets barbed wire socko on Edge and Lita. There's a Lita joke in there somewhere. Who gets her mouth all cut up when Foley does the barbed wire socko on her. Foley's a bloody mess. He grabs Barbie and smacks Edge in the gut, the back, and the face with it. Edge is busted open. Really good hardcore drama here. Foley drags Barbie across the cut-up forehead. Lita smacks Foley with Barbie and then lights the table on fire. And then in an iconic WrestleMania spot, Edge spears Foley off the apron through the fire table in a very incredibly memorable spot. Insane moment that you never expected at Mania. I mean, did you ever expect we'd see a flaming table spot at WrestleMania?
No.
A great hardcore match that had a lot of drama, a lot of story to it. It wasn't just trash for trash. Edge has a marquee win. Foley gets his classic. I think it's a... I want your thoughts on this. Where you think it compares to him and Orton? I think it's a slight step behind, but it's really, really well done. It's one of my kind of guilty pleasure Mania favorites.
I think this match was meant to be Edge's version of Backlash 04, to put him over as a guy who will do anything to get what he wants, just like Orton did. So, yeah, I think the match is meant to be the same thing. Was it better? No. It's a notch. It's a couple of notches below, simply because it's not as long. They didn't go around. They didn't really spread out further than the ring. Words can't describe my surprise when Edge actually landed barebacked on that on those tacks. I never thought he'd do it.
I thought he'd do it,
but Orton did it. So Edge had to do it.
Yeah, I thought it was more likely for Edge to do it than Orton.
Yeah, that's true too.
I think you could argue that Edge didn't need to do it.
Probably not. His
Orton
kind of
needed it at the time. Edge is established. You know, he doesn't.
Yeah,
that
is true.
Back first into the thumbtacks, but
I didn't think either of them would do the fire table. That's ridiculous. I mean, you could seriously get hurt. Yeah. I mean, the thumbtacks are thumbtacks, it's not just fully landing on it, but it's, you know, what if Edge's face, you know, he's doing a spear. What if his face goes right into the flames? I mean,
yeah, it's all gimmicked up. They know what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, of course it's getting what they're doing. That doesn't mean that the table's going
to go. They know how to fall.
It's not like the table's going to cooperate, but,
this table's on fire.
I think enough with Foley and the fucking sweatpants. My God. Seriously, man. Get some tights. What happened to the cactus tights?
He's retired. He can wear what he wants.
Fucking sweatpants. Terrible. But that doesn't take away he worked his ass off. I'll give Foley that, though, definitely.
Oh, yeah. That was a great match. I would argue, I don't know, greatest garbage match in Mania history. It depends if you classify the TLC
matches. There was a pretty good
garbage
match later on in the show. Yeah. that
and it depends how you classify, like, the TLCs and ladder matches, like those garbage matches. I guess it's tough to say. It's probably the best, like, pure hardcore rules match.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's the best gimmick garbage match not involving a ladder.
Okay. On a Sunday.
If you want to be that specific. On a Sunday with a 4 o'clock game.
Against a left-handed pitcher.
At
the end of this, are you satisfied with where Edge landed after his title reign is cut short? He doesn't get in the main event. You know, is this a worthy consolation?
Yep, it is. It is. It's a moment. I mean, we're talking about it. It's remembered, and it continues. He has this little bit with Foley for it doesn't end here, and we'll continue. We'll get to the next few vaults. We'll talk about how the two evolve and how the feud kind of serpentines into something else. And I think it's fine for Edge. They had preconceived notion. You know that, guys. They had plans set in place for Cena from now till a certain point. So they just needed to wait and get that over with before Edge can get what he wants. Because you knew Edge was in their main event plans for the next several years. So for now, though, we just got to get what they probably told Edge. Look, this is going to be great for you. Just roll with it. You are a champion. You will get your title shot. You will get your title. We just got to get through this. Let us do this. Let's get this out of the way. And then you're set. So he's like, all right. And he rolled with it. So Lita was a heat magnet. And Foley was, again, he did his job. Mm-hmm. He did what he had to do. He put over the younger guy. And it's probably going to go down as one of the most memorable matches of WrestleMania history. Maybe not one of the, you know, it's not five stars or anything, but, you know, you could be not five stars and be memorable. And this match is one of the most memorable in the history of the company mm-hmm. for many reasons. But mostly because Edge stayed hot and strong, and Foley didn't dog it, but he never does anyway. So Edge wins, and the flaming table spot might be one of the most memorable spots in the history of the company. So
my spot. All right, we go backstage where Booker and Charmel are trying to prep for their match with the Boogeyman. They don't know why he's targeting them, though. So they march through this parade of oddities, including Paul Burchill, Ted DiBiase, who I don't know why he gets lumped in as an oddity, but here he is. Eugene's doing the basketball, and DiBiase kicks it away. It's a funny throwback. We come upon Snitsky licking Mae Young's foot, which we didn't really need to see. And then, although there might be some other into it, Goldust is dressed as a woman. And then we get a nice touch. We reunite Bookdust for a moment. Goldust tells Booker to unleash his inner freak if he wants to beat Boogeyman, and then tells him to put the worms, and then he whispers into Booker's ear, and Booker does tell me to not say that. I thought it was funny. Again, weird to put DiBiase with the groups, and it's a funny punchline with Siski saying that's not my fault when Booker storms off. But
right.
I thought it was a good enough bit. You know, it becomes a thing starting pretty much here where we get the legends getting worked into every every Mania for a little quick backstage spot. So this is fine.
Yeah, no, it was fine. It was Phil. It was a bridge. Simply nothing more. Nothing offensive. I mean, it's a WrestleMania, so you're going to need a lot of time to kill anyway. But simple bridge sets up our next.
Hey, PTB Nation. It is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan Update.
I got my 2x4.
Something I could have made his ass a real man. Something I wanted, but I never was pushy. The motherfucker never ate my pussy.
Vince Kennedy McMahon Jr. here with the Hacksaw Jim Duggan update in March 2006. Jim Duggan was injecting Snitsky with HGH in the back room of the bathroom in the warehouse.
Whoa. Vince, cease and desist. I'm sorry to
Brad
barge
Woodling,
in.
This isn't about me funding wrestling with words, is it?
No, I'm sorry to barge in. I just watched Camp WWE. Well, 7 minutes of it at least.
Oh, Brad, you didn't watch that show, did you? That's all about catering to the dumbest of the marks like Papa Hales.
Look, I gotta do my homework, but I gotta tell you, Vince, I'm filing an injunction. Their characterization of you, this voiceover they have of you, I mean, that is a direct imitation of the work that we have paid you for a Place to Be Nation.
Whoa, 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 what do you mean? That's just a gimmick, Woodling. I mean, what do you mean, Place to Be Nation? This shit's being recorded? I thought I was just talking to my buddy Scott. Who are you, Bubba the fucking Love Sponge? I gotta watch what I say everywhere now?
Yes, this is our actual studio. I mean, yes, there's a bed in the corner. Sometimes Scott stays here. Armento's in and out. Whatever, you know.
Unbelievable.
You know,
look, unbelievable.
We have
anything
this shit
can happen in the World Wrestling Federation.
We have this shit copyrighted, trademarked. You know, it's ours. So we need. You know, we got to shut this down. I mean,
you didn't record me having sex with Dr. G's wife, did you?
What day was that again? I mean, we kind of go through the tapes, so it's kind of weird.
Oh,
like, we really roll them only for like 30 days.
I want to go back to the 70s where you could bang bitches and do coke off guys' asses with no repercussions. You could do whatever you wanted. Me and Claire in the limos. Going to ABA games. Tearing it up. Now you can't even take a shit without it being on Instagram.
You know, that's Rotella's fault. You know what? I wrote him up for it, and if he does it one more time, he's done.
Oh, God. All the social media, you hit on Twitter. You want me to go start a fight? Seems like you use some new voices of wrestling out there on your site and go out there and get the ball rolling.
Well, you know, I am currently balancing 25 underrated feuds right now that I could, you know, I could use a little muscle for. I mean,
this is an inside wrestling, Woodling. I don't care about your top 10 ranking lists.
That's fair, Vince. But so, you know, so listen, I've been paying you. I've been paying your posse. You know, Matt Rotella makes one appearance a year on our show. And you know,
that's all you need. That's all the ratings. He's like the Slammies. Well, it's a gift that keeps giving. He's even hunched over like that award.
Tell me about Armento. What value does he add here, Vince? I need your voice. Your voice is mine. I can't be sharing you with some cartoon where Ric Flair fucks a rock.
Listen, Brad, the Rock, he's on episode 2. Listen, I'm going to be gutted if I have to cancel this show, Woodland Camp WWE. Let me do this. Let me make it worth your while, okay? Here's the deal. Right. Picture it. Meat Flaps, Knights of Columbus meetings, the Nichols Brothers, Georgia football, Jimmy Rave. That can all be yours. Just sell your site to me, retire, take it easy, go into the old folks' home out in the River Bend Jewish community home in New York City, and, you know, settle down, call it a day, and let me run the ship.
Sure. I mean, it sounds nice, but, you know, I mean, you touched on a couple things here, but what about some type of camping?
All right, just Dustin, not Jeremy.
No, both. I don't give a fuck. Give me something else here, Vince. I'm not ready to retire yet. You know, it's tempting. You know, we get a lot of financial offers. Tell me what you can do with me. You threw a couple things out there. You know, you got Camp WWE. What can we do with Place to Be Nation?
How did Jimmy Snuka and Akeem not make that greatest wrestler ever thing? I did see that. You're selective with murderers you put on the list? Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I mean, there's certain, you tier murderers in different power rankings.
All right, listen.
Yeah.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to meet in the middle, okay? We're going to keep Camp WWE on there. I'm not going to breach my contract with you and your boys. What we're going to do is we're going to create a second show just to air on PlaceToBeNation.com called Camp PTBN. How's that sound?
Oh, I like it. So you're talking like I could have like little Chad Campbell goes to summer camp, little Jordan Duncan.
Yeah, Scott Griscola, Jesus Camp, it's all there.
Okay, all right. There's some ideas here. All right, keep going. What do you think?
Well, I already got a theme song. And I think, you know, I sent it over to your office earlier. You may not know what it was, but I think we should just sing it and show how we're unified. It's completely unique to this show. It's, you know, we can agree. This is brand new material, not stolen from anywhere. What do you say we sing it?
All right, let me check the fax machine, since it obviously has to be where you sent this, since it was whatever. Okay, yep, all right, let's do this.
We run, we jump, we fight and play. We do blow and bow to trips. But the things that last forever are our championships. Camp PTBN.
We hold you in our hearts.
And when we think about you,
it makes me want to par.
It's I hope we never part. Now get it right or pay the price.
Now we will share a lifetime of nonsense from Dr. G by the lakes of downtown Brooklyn, made worse by Scotty C.
Camp PTBN, we hold you in our hearts.
And when we think about... this bit fell apart.
Think PTBN, speak PTBN, live PTBN, Armento! See? Now that's completely new and original. You never hear anything like that anywhere.
I've never heard it before. I mean, truthfully, I mean, it sounds good to me. I mean, I think we could even write, like, you know, four or five additional verses, and we get creative again. But, you know, Vince, you know, I'm digging this.
Well, it'd be the first time you're creative with anything. Ripping off Fold 4, One Romania, list ideas and everything else you got going on.
Yeah, okay, maybe guilty on that one. All right, you got me, bud.
So, what should I tell the animator, Seth Green? Should I let him know Jordan Duncan has hair
Jordan
down below
Duncan
or
has
on his head?
Do
you want the wig as a pubic wig, a merkin, or do you want like a regular wig?
Well, you know, we're going to have to talk to my designer. Yeah, I mean, I see you, there's a lot of wig possibilities
Hey, can we not do anything with Star Trek? Isn't wrestling nerdy enough? We got to do Star Trek now?
No, we're going to stick to the Star Trek. I mean, I got, you know, the Butler brothers, the brothers of discussion. You've heard their
nickname. That's a real original, more originality, Woodling.
Yeah. Yeah, but, so Glenn, like little Glenn Butler will be there, little Steve Willey, little Ben Morris, our friend. Let's see.
Steve Willey. That sounds very accurate.
Yeah, I mean, we could do some things there. I mean, truthfully, there are some possibilities. You know, little Chatty Campbell talked about that. Let's see. Little Jason Greenhouse. We have a lot.
No Jews.
Okay. Well, really, that limits, like, that takes out, like, 3/4, I think.
Good.
That's a lot. That's a big.
All right. Listen, we're going to go ahead and I'm going to wrap things up. I'm going to go and talk to Seth Green. We'll get Camp PTBN on the air. We're good. No more lawsuits. No more injunctions. I'll talk to you next week, Woodley. Now get the fuck out of my studio.
It's my studio.
By the way, did you like that newest playlist I sent you?
I did.
I sent it in the mail on cassette.
I know. I mean,
you owe me a penny.
I know. All right, I sign up for, you know, for the 12 tapes for a penny, and you still owe me like 6 more or whatever.
All right, I'll get in the studio this weekend. I'll crank them out.
Sounds good, Vince.
Speaking of cracking them out, Claire, get over here.
Well, I don't know. Whatever. Let's hope Vince doesn't get Jerry McDivitt involved. Hopefully Brad straightened things out there. So,
yeah, I really hope so, too. By the way, I want to make a correction. But I bet you anything, JR. I'll bet you a 6
It's already been posted.
What's that?
It's already been posted before you can correct it.
Oh, yeah. That we're on episode 404, not 403. So my sincere apologies for that. We're on 404. I'm trying not to get to – I don't want to rush to 500. So, no. Yeah, there's a lot of –
We're coming for you, nigga.
Speaking of Jerry McDevitt. All right. How do we get here? And then we'll talk about Booker. So go ahead.
Okay. So the night after No Way Out, Boogeyman began to terrorize Booker T and Charmel. On 3-3, Booker was wrestling Tatanka. When Charmel was on commentary during the match, Boogie popped up from the crowd and frothed at the mouth behind Charmel, distracting Booker and allowing Tatanka to get the win. The next week, Booker brought out a bag full of what he claimed were complaint letters from civic groups about Boogie's mistreatment of women. Teddy Long appeared and told Booker he'd have to face Boogeyman at Saturday Night's Main Event. Red smoke and worms then began coming out of Booker's bag. Boogie appeared at ringside, sending Booker and Charmel scurrying out of the ring. At Saturday's main event, Booker faked a knee injury and got out of the match, but later in the show, Boogie showed up in his locker room, sent him running into the hallway right into Teddy. Seeing that Booker was not injured, he said that Booker would now face Boogie at Mania. And the next week, Teddy forced Booker to sign a Mania contract and then revealed that the bout would be a handicap match that included Charmel as well. And finally, on 3/31, Boogeyman interjected himself during a Booker and Paul Burchill match, kidnapped Charmel, and Booker found her later in a room filled of worms. He would rescue his wife, but it was clear that Boogie had won the psychological war heading into this match. So, sad news to Booker since his renaissance. We get a funny bit where Booker and Charmel jump a mile when his pyro blows off because they're afraid of Boogie. Boogie, who's still undefeated here, of course, marches to the ring. Booker makes Charmel start, but then attacks from behind. I thought that was a good piece of heel work. Match happens bathed in a red smoke from the entrance. Charmel distraction allows Booker to get a sidekick, and then Booker hits a bookend for a 2 count. Is dominated most of the match, actually. Boogie makes a comeback and teases the worms. Charmel comes in with the staff, but he kisses her with a mouthful of worms, and she runs away screaming, and then Boogie finishes off Booker with a tree slam. I actually thought this was fine nonsense as a cooldown match from Edge and Foley. I just would have sacrificed somebody else instead of Booker. I would have maybe put Booker or Money in the Bank, and you could have thrown anyone else, Tatanka, anyone in here. A little long for what they were trying to go for, again, but it could have been worse. Boogie is fine for comedy bits, but we don't need pay-per-view wins. And this is where I would have dumped this all together, put Eminem and Booker in Money in the Bank, and then do Lashley, Finley. Or just do Lashley, Booker. You know, you could have just put Lashley right here and throw Eminem in the ladder match, and you don't need Boogie wrestling on Mania. Even if it's for comedy purposes.
And you could have had Lashley win, preceding what the two of them would do at the next SmackDown-only pay-per-view.
Yeah, I feel bad for Booker. Great feud, multi-pay-per-view feud with Benoit over the U.S. belt. Great matches, worked so well together, and then they had to deal with this. The only thing with Charmel was looking pretty good in some of these. And Charmel is usually one that, that you don't really think of when you think of the hotter divas because she's usually not dressed like that. But she had some moments during this feud where she looked very good. But she added a lot to it, though, because she was so freaked out and everything.
Yeah, they were good in it. And, you know, it's like you feel bad for Booker because he was so good. But he's playing that chicken shit heel role that kind of lends itself to something like this. So you kind of get over it. And then, you know, he's headed for pretty big things. So he'll be okay. You know, he's got,
yeah,
he's
exactly.
Coming,
he ate some crow here. You know, he ate a plate of shit and then we move on. I mean, it's not, the, it's a bummer, but it's all right.
All right. And we got to make,
I mean, Boogie
time.
Was
sorry.
A, Boogie was a,
move on.
Yeah, no, Boogie was just a, the one thing I'll just finish with is Boogie was a, they had to put him at, here at Mania because they put so much effort on SmackDown into him, and he was on every episode, as annoying as it was, maybe, for some. You had to stick him here in something. So, next up is a feud and our, what, third title match of the evening, JRs. The Women's Championship is on the line in a very long, entertaining at times, if you're a red-blooded male, feud that finally really culminates here. So, what is the final chapter, JR, of this feud leading up to tonight?
So, following the Royal Rumble, this feud really picked up some steam. On January 30th, Mickey held an in-ring Trish appreciation celebration. During the festivities, Ashley came out and told Mickey that Trish didn't love her and that everyone thought she was crazy. Mickey snapped and assaulted Ashley in retaliation, and the next week, Ashley pinned Mickey after Mickey bumped into Trish, who was serving as a guest referee. Later that night, Mickey apologized to Trish when Trish's date, Jack, came in to check on Trish, angering Mickey. A week later, Jack caught Mickey in Trish's dressing room wearing a Trish wig, and Mickey began screaming that Jack was hurting her and her had security take him away. She then told that same story to Trish when she returned. On February 27th, Mickey and Trish won a tag match, and afterwards, Mickey got a little too close with her celebration, hugging Trish around the waist and burying her face in Trish's lower abdomen. The next week, Trish told Mickey that she needed some space and wanted a break from hanging out. Trish relented the next week when Mickey asked to take the injured Tori Wilson spot on Trish's side of a tag match as Saturday Night's main event. That Saturday, Mickey and Trish won the match, but things got ugly after when Mickey tried to kiss Trish after the bell, but Trish dodged the kiss. Mickey followed with a chick kick and satisfaction coupled with psychotic facial expressions. On March 20th, it was announced that Mickey would face Trish for the title here at Mania. Mickey came out with a giant box, was placed in the ring. After Trish refused to come out for the present, Mickey removed the box to reveal Ashley tagged up and gagged. Trish tried to make the save, but Mickey beat her down and left her knocked out with a huge DDT. The highlight was Mickey's bloody nose, adding to her sadistic facial expression. The next week, we got a vignette of Mickey in a room filled with candles and pictures of Trish. She claimed that she was now obsessed with winning the women's title and destroying Trish's career. A lot of erotic fantasies fulfilled on this night. Been a great feud, kicked up a notch. Mickey goes full psycho. Most hyped women's match, I think, in over 20 years in many ways. Both look great here. They have great characters. They're good workers in the ring. And it's a dream combo for the point at this, you know, at this point for the company. Just, you know, hot women that can wrestle, that are good at, you know, conveying emotion and putting over a good storyline. Like, it's just, they haven't had this complete of a package of women's wrestling in probably ever. Aggressive start for both. Mickey smacks Trish around. Trish slugs her right back. It's good to see, given the heated storyline, that they come out firing right away. Trish hammers away and then kicks Mickey to the floor. Mickey dodges a chick kick on the floor. Trish bashes a foot into the post. Mickey goes to work on the lower leg while mixing in some strikes, including a low drop kick and a half crab. Trish hobbles through a comeback attempt, hitting a head scissors, but the crowd is completely turned on her, and they're fully backing Mickey, who's just reveling in it. Mickey tries to go to the top, but gets caught. Trish gets a head scissors, but Mickey blocks and snaps Trish's leg across the top viciously as the crowd pops big. Mickey's facials and presence is just amazing here. Trish battles back, but is still hurting, avoids Mickey's finisher, and hits a running powerbomb for a near fall. Trish ducks a kick with the Matrish and then goes to Stratisfaction, but Mickey rubs her crotch and then licks her fingers as the crowd just goes wild. Trish is completely rattled by this. Mickey botches the Stratisfaction and then hits a kick to the head to win the match and a massive pop. Great match. I think Mickey has busted her ass and easily deserved this win in this moment. The best Mania women's match to date by far. I think, I mean, what is the other option, I guess, is, you know, Leilani Kai and Wendi Richter. I mean, it passes that, I think, and I can't think of anything else that would even give it a run. Great payoff due to a well-done story. Trish puts over Mickey Strong. Great selling. And, of course, the finger lick and the botch satisfaction are cut out of the network. Where they were cut out of the DVD, actually, back in the day, too. So you'll only see that if you actually have the original pay-per-view copy from the original airing. You'll get the full Monty from that match. But I love this match. It still holds up, Scott. I think both women have killed it since this thing started back in October. And they should feel really proud coming out of this match for what they've delivered.
Mm. Number one, Mickey James. Mickey is just, from the moment she debuted, she was absolutely fantastic carrying this storyline. Trish was very, deadpan through most of the storyline, and she carried her end of things, but Mickey really got the job done. I think that, more than anything else, makes this match even better, besides the fact they worked so awesome in the ring together. And they did have a match together already. Circumstances were a little different, but at least they got to know each other in the ring. I think just the way Mickey carried herself in these three or four months made the build leading up to this that much better. Number two, it's a bummer about the botched satisfaction, because you would have figured at that point that they wouldn't have, that they could have done it.
Yeah, I think there's blown it, but fatigue, but a lot going on. I
mean, but shit happens, People blow.
Well, they kind of wrote it off. I mean, I don't know. It was a botch, but it wasn't, because if you look at the context of the match, Trish, remember, messed her foot up when she kicked the post. Mm-hmm. So the argument could be that she was selling the leg and her leg collapsed during it. And I don't think they put that over well enough in commentary. So they end up cutting it out and treating it like a botch. I don't know if it really was. That might have been the planned move.
Might have been the planned move, sure. They were too crisp to do that. So, and number three, you can't cut out the finger lick and not cut out her rubbing her crotch. They kind of go hand in hand.
They cut out both, didn't they?
No, the crotch rub was on the network. Yeah.
Was it? I thought they kind of like...
No, they did the crotch rub when Trish dropped her. Instead of going to the camera shot of her licking her fingers, they do a crowd shot. And then when they go back to Mickey, she's smiling like, I think I got the crowd pumped on that one.
But the way the crowd turns halfway through is amazing. They just like...
Yeah.
They are all Mickey for the back end of that match. And she fed off it greatly. I mean, she really played it up.
Yep, she did. No, she might be one of the unspoken MVPs of this night. Mm-hmm. I mean, she knew how to...
I don't think it's
even
unspoken. It was very spoken. I mean, yeah. I think this is one of the matches most people remember, which speaks to how great it was, too, that when you think of this Mania, you think of the women's title match.
Yep, I agree 100%. It was a big deal. It was a big deal. And, 400-something days. I mean, she was the longest reigning champion of any of the belt holders. So,
not longer than me, baby. Fabulous Moolah.
That's right. So,
the
Mickey
only
James,
one difference is that Trish wasn't whoring out all the other women on the roster to keep her position.
Yes. So there you go. Mickey James is your new women's champion in a pretty awesome match. I mean, 3.5 stars, which for, in if you're ranking strictly women's matches, 3.5 is pretty damn good. And we'll see how this feud progresses with now the shoe on the other foot, and Mickey is the chasee and Trish the chaser. So
we go backstage where Vincent Kennedy McMahon,
fucking ridiculous,
looking quite overtanned, and juiced.
He looks like a shoe.
Absurd levels is juiced. I mean, just
he's
busting out of skin. Makes the rest of the family pray, and he runs down Vince. He runs down Shawn Michaels, of course, and he gets the great line: "God, I don't like you, and you don't like me." Great start to the prayer. So I like the way the McMahon interplay has been through this feud. We'll talk about it more at our next show and a little bit.
Even
later.
10 years ago, and I understand she was pregnant. I get that. Mm-hmm. Even 10 years ago, Stephanie looked ridiculously different than she even does now. She's in kind of that in-between phase, but obviously she was pregnant. So, and it's amazing now, 10 years later, how young even Shane was. I know 10 years, it seems like a long time, and it doesn't seem like a long time at the same time, but Shane just seems so young compared to what we see him now. But that whole segment was ridiculously awkward. More on Vince later.
Indeed.
Next up, our annual match of The Streak. Mm-hmm. which was talked about a lot in this build. How'd we get here?
On 3-3, The Undertaker received a world title rematch against Kurt Angle. After 24 minutes of action, it looked like Taker was poised to win, but Mark Henry and Daivari interfered and cost Taker the match. After the bell, Henry knocked Taker to the floor and crushed him with a splash through the announce table. The next week, Henry claimed that Taker had stolen his title rematch and that Angle only remained champion because of him. Later that night, Henry put Angle through the announce table with a splash as well. After he did, Undertaker's music hit and a challenge for WrestleMania casket match was issued into the arena. On Saturday's main event, Henry and Daivari were cutting a promo, but were interrupted by Undertaker and a cadre of druids that wheeled a casket to ringside. Taker fought Henry off and proceeded to tombstone Daivari on top of the casket. The assault would knock Daivari out of Mania, and on 3-24, Henry would defeat Angle in a non-title match, thanks to some accidental interference from Rey Mysterio. He then warned Taker that he was going to end his streak. Finally, on 3-31, Henry delivered a promo inside the ring, which was decorated as a church, and ran through all the men that had failed to end the streak, claiming he'd be the one to get the job done. And yes, Scott, you're right. Probably the first time it's really the focus of a storyline. We saw it a little bit with Orton talking about it, and I don't think it doesn't become the storyline. I think we talked about this last week. It doesn't become the storyline for a couple of years, but it's part of the storyline for kind of the first time.
Yes. No, it definitely is.
So after a little bit of an aberration, we're back to the old school, you know, Taker matches against the big monsters. Henry settled into the fine role after the January fiasco, had Daivari managing him, but of course not here. First ever casket match in Mania history, by the way, which is kind of weird. you think they would have had one before this point.
I know. Yeah, I know, right? They had him for all the other big, there's been a Rumble one, a SummerSlam one, and a Survivor Series one, so they have all the big four covered now.
Henry attacks with the bell and clubs away using his power offense. Taker makes a quick comeback but gets knocked outside and rams into the steps. Henry continues his methodical assault and gets the first attempt at the casket, but Taker blocks and battles back into the ring. Taker comes back and tries to work the shoulder and goes old school, but Henry fights him off and tries to squash Taker on the ropes, but Taker dodges and Henry slides right into the casket with the two battle and trade blows. Neither man gains an advantage, and they end up back inside the ring. Henry regains control and takes the fight to Taker, dropping him with a power slam, but forgetting there are no pins. Henry kicks Taker into the casket, but he fights right back out. Henry shoves Taker into the corner and mounts him, but Taker staggers out with the last ride. Henry gets dumped to the floor, and Taker hits his usual crazy awesome spot with a tope over the top and a casket into Henry. A wild spot there that could have really ended ugly if they didn't hit it right. Back inside Taker, it's a tombstone and rolls Henry into the casket for the win. Not bad. You know, now one of Taker's better bouts. It had some feisty moments mixed in. Henry gave it a go, but only the final couple of minutes were really good. Taker now 14-0, and he intimates that he wants back into the world title picture. Again, you know, it's in the bottom third of Taker matches, but it's not terrible. It's not like Bundy level, you know, or whatever, Gonzalez level.
No. 3 points. Number one, Taker looked in great shape here. And I like that he ditched the leather pants and did like the whole, I don't say unitard, but like the full tights. I mean, he looked in great shape. Number two, I have to give a lot of credit to Mark Henry. And I think in his 10th year in the company, I think he finally feels like I'm not the laughing stock of this company. All the jokes that have been over the years is that he's fat and he always gets hurt. But I feel like since he came back from the injury, this last injury in what, late 04, I guess, or early 05.
Yeah.
He's finally taken seriously and can be a legit threat to people, and you could have big feuds. And this is a big moment for Mark Henry in his career at this point. I mean, when was his last Mania appearance? He wasn't at 21. Was he even at 20? When was his last Mania appearance?
No, he got hurt right before 20. Wasn't that when he was supposed to fight Hardy?
Yeah, that was, he was with,
oh,
Doug,
no, that
and
was
Buggy
21.
That.
What was that, 20? I don't know. There was one time, it was 20, where he was supposed to fight Hardy, I thought, and they both go left off the card.
Yeah, well, during the whole Thuggin' and Buggin'. But when was the last time?
16? Was he at 16?
I guess.
I don't think he even wrestled there, did he? Has he ever been in a Mania?
That's what I'm saying. Oh my God!
This might be his Mania debut.
No, he was he in the he had to have been in the Battle Royal at 15, the tag one.
Yeah, maybe that was on the pre-show.
Oh, wow.
This might be his first actual on-screen WrestleMania appearance.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Isn't that fucking crazy? He's been with the company 10 years. Isn't that wild? Right, he wasn't at, was he on the Nation's team against LOD and Ahmed?
He wasn't in the Battle Royal either.
Oh, okay.
No, he was not on the Nation's team.
He wasn't on the Nation's team.
No, 14? He didn't join the Nation until 98.
Oh, yeah, right. He wasn't at 14.
Nope.
He wasn't at 15. I mean, isn't this bonkers? He's been with the company 10 years, and this is his first Mania. It's ridiculous when you think about it.
Yeah, unless he's in the 16. Is he in the 16 Battle Royal? The Hardcore Battle Royal?
I don't think so. Well, will you look that up? I'll continue my comments.
He was not.
This has to be his first Mania. I'm sure someone will.
No,
will
I can't fight. Think of it. I think it is. I think it's his first
Yeah.
match.
Think about that, JR. Wrap your head around that. 10 years he's been with this company, and his first Mania match is against Taker. I really do think the company wanted to reward. I mean, this guy has just been a laughingstock, unfortunately, since he's been there with all the dopey injuries and they finally gave him something. Look, maybe this was his last chance. Look, we're going to give you this. Don't get hurt. And he put on a better match, I think, than anybody thought he would. I'm watching this match today, and I'm like, this really isn't that bad. Again, it's not, you know, future opponents, The Undertaker would have at WrestleMania, but it's not, again, it's not Bundy. It's not, you know, Snuka, or it's not even that tag disaster at 19. I mean, this is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Comparatively,
it's not pretty good.
Well, comparatively speaking,
no,
it's not bad.
Sure.
Could have been worse.
Yeah.
So that's my second point. Kudos to Mark Henry. And number three, the streak. It's not they're not beating you over the head with it yet, but now they're realizing, wow, 14-0, maybe something we should probably start utilizing.
Mm-hmm.
And they do. So I like this match. Again, comparatively speaking. As compared to other Taker matches, it's really not bad. But the Undertaker's streak now at 14-0, which does compared to the other matches on the streak, I mean, what's it better than Bundy, Snuka,
Gonzalez?
Maybe that's it. Sid,
Jake, it's better. Jake is probably better.
Yeah, Sid.
That's probably on par with Sid, but you don't get the title.
Well, it's not better than both Kane's and both Kane. I mean, if Kane at 14 is really good. Kane at 20 is. Eesh. What is the best Taker match to this point? I probably remember to ask you this at every Mania vault. What is the best Taker Mania match to this point? Flair?
Either Flair or Orton.
Or maybe Triple H?
No. Flair or Orton. Yeah, Triple H is. Yeah, those are probably the top three, with the Diesel one kind of and Kane wrapping up the top five.
Yeah. I still love the Diesel match to this point. It's a great match. Different Taker, though.
Go back and listen to WrestleMania 12 to hear about that. Let's move on.
All right, next up, a guy who's just as old as it seems like than most of these WrestleManias, but it is the continuing accruing of this guy taking on all of his best talent over his career. How really do we get here?
On January 30th, Shawn Michaels confronted Vince McMahon about Shane costing him the Royal Rumble match, challenging him to a fight. Vince refused to fight, but dared Shawn to hit him, with the caveat that Vince would fire him upon contact. As Shawn was distracted, Shane assaulted him with a chair. And on 2-6, Vince called out Shawn about a threat he made to walk out of WWE. Vince took it literally, pulled him out of the Road to WrestleMania tournament, and told Shawn he'd be throwing a retirement party for him the following week. A week later, Vince threw Shawn his party, but Shawn refused to sign the retirement papers, tearing them up instead. Vince then smacked Shawn in the face and told him he had opened the gates to his own personal hell. On 2-20, Marty Jannetty made his return, saving Michaels from a Spirit Squad attack. Vince then told Jannetty he would have to offer him a contract if he joined the Vince McMahon Kiss My Ass Club. The next week, Shawn apologized to Marty for getting him involved in this mess, but Marty said he was just trying to help out his friend. Marty told Shawn that he doesn't kiss any ass, but that he was broke and needed the job, so he would do what he had to do. At the end of the night, Marty was in position to kiss Vince's ass, but he couldn't do it and asked if there was another way. Vince told him he would take the Master Lock challenge instead. So Master took the Master Lock and then forced Marty towards Vince's ass, but Shawn made the save. Shawn took out Masters, but Shane slid in and smacked Shawn with a chair. Vince still told Shawn that he would face Shane at Saturday's main event. And Shane picked up the unconscious Shawn and made him kiss Vince's ass. A week later, Shawn jumped to bragging Vince to start the show. After security pulled him off, Vince said that Shawn would face Shane in a street fight at Saturday's main event and a regular match that night as well. Later in the show, a pregnant Stephanie McMahon appeared and apologized to Shawn and then faked some pain. As Shawn went to help, Steph laced his water. A few minutes into the match with Shane, Shawn succumbed to the spiked water and collapsed. Shane easily pinned him and Vince subsequently did the same. On 3/13, Vince demanded that Shawn submit himself to a public drug test due to his erratic behavior. Vince told Shawn that he would forfeit his Saturday's main event match if he failed. Shawn instead went behind a partition and pissed in the cup, but instead of handing it to the doctor, he threw it on Vince and Shane. Also that night, Vince told Shane that he was bringing in Jim Ross to Saturday's main event to call Shane's beatdown on Shawn. That night, Shawn would lose a handicap match to the Spirit Squad after Shane slammed the cage door on his head. At Saturday's main event, Shane would win a violent brawl. Thanks to Vince calling for the bell while he had Shawn locked in the sharpshooter revisiting Montreal. That week on Raw, Vince and Shane hilariously marched to the ring as balloons and confetti filled the air with a jazz band playing When the Saints Go Marching In. Vince announced that he and Shawn would compete in a no-holds-barred match at Mania. Shawn later wrestled Shane and Triple H for no contest when John Cena got involved to help out. On 3/27, Michaels faced Triple H, but things got ugly again after he got hit with a pedigree and a sledgehammer. After Vince got involved, he would receive another brutal sledgehammer shot to end the show. This is Vince's first pay-per-view match since defeating Undertaker, so Survivor Series 2003, so he's been off for a while. Of course, part of that was the quad tear. Part of it was kind of the focusing on the young guys throughout 04. So his first match here. Jannetty was actually set to stick around and continue alongside Shawn in this feud, with rumors sparking that he would even turn on Shawn to feud with him. Before the angle could continue, Marty was cut loose and things were rewritten. Marty later revealed his probation agreement prevented him from traveling to Birmingham, Alabama that week for Raw. Vince decided they couldn't take any chances with these issues cropping up and let Marty go. And poor Marty, just the constant victim of circumstance throughout his career. Yep. Most of it self-inflicted, but yeah. Still. And, of course, we already covered all the Bret Hart stuff, so we don't have to touch on that. So before we get to the match, what did you think of the build? Because I actually thought it was pretty well done.
It was intense, and it was a lot. I mean, they covered a lot of bases. And Vince just, I got an opinion about Vince as part of my points, for my comments, but, it was very detailed. It was very, you could tell they put a lot of work into it to make sure it made sense and to really create something special for this show and to give it a lot of shine. So I was impressed. I actually enjoyed the build. The whole throwing piss in their face was pretty funny. Typical them. But I enjoyed it. I thought the build was good. I thought it was well written. It was detailed. They used every, minute of Raw that they needed to do it. So I enjoyed it. It was a good build to get to this point. Big time.
Yeah. No, they did a pretty good job with what they had to work with. Vince is really firing it up. And I we talked about the Saturday's main event. I like when him and Shane work together.
I do too.
I think it's a good pairing, and Shawn really played into it well. I like that they used a lot of reality in the feud. You know, Shawn's erratic behavior, Jannetty's financial problems. You know, they really played up brought a lot of realism to it. So
yes, I think they had to.
So of course, this all started when Shawn told Vince to get over Montreal. Of course, the hope was that Bret would take part, but he declined. Vince has hounded Michaels, made him miserable, bloodied him up wherever he could. Spirit Squad, of course, had taken part in this whole stuff as well. Good hype going in, as both always deliver at Mania, even though they promised it would not be 5 stars. You knew they'd probably go out there and give some sort of entertaining match. Vince has completely gone off the rails, egomaniacal, including his absurd magazine cover that we see here for the Muscle and Fitness, where he's just ridiculously jacked up. He brings out the big blown-up version of it here. McMahon's first pay-per-view in a long time, like we talked about. Michaels is very focused as he enters a rare occasion where we're not getting an in-ring classic. JR said he was brought back specifically by Vince to call these matches. Vince does his over-the-top entrance with the insane strut, the great tan, the gassed physique, just pure, unadulterated Mr. McMahon here. Mm-hmm. Michaels attacks Vince as he poses. He chops and chucks him around the ring, choking with a microphone cord. Michaels bashes the big magazine poster over Vince's head. Spirit Squad comes out and beats on Shawn in a swarming, energetic way, but Michaels fights the ball off. But that gives Vince enough time to regroup, and he mashes Shawn with a clothesline. Vince then lays in some strikes and whips Michaels with the belt with his belt. Michaels, Vince mocks Brett and then teases Sweet Chin Music, but HBK blocks it and goes on the attack with some strikes and his usual offense. Michaels sets up for Sweet Chin Music himself, but then Shane comes out and smacks him with a kendo stick. Michaels turns the tide and shoves Shane into Vince's ass and then cuffs him to the ropes to work him over with the kendo, gets his good revenge there. The crowd is smoking hot as Sean smashes Vince with a nasty, gross chair shot to the head. Mm-hmm. Michaels teases Sweet Chin Music, but stops so he can beat on him some more. Then he smashes him in the head with a ladder, and McMahon is just pouring blood by now. Michaels fills the ring with weapons and uses them to bash Vince, and then sets him up on a table and pulls out a massive ladder. Puts a trash can on Vince's head. HBK climbs, tosses out a socket, and then hits an elbow through the table in a memorable and impressive spot. It was gratuitous, but because it's Vince, it works just fine, I think. Michaels shoos away the doctors and then hits Sweet Chin Music for the win. I thought it was a really fun garbage match. It didn't overstay its welcome at all. I thought it was a good payoff to all the torture. It ended up being a better feud than it seemed when it all started. Vince takes a great shit-kicking. He does the great bloody middle finger on the stretcher to close it out. And I think many thought this would be it. I don't think anyone really thought it was going to continue. We'll see that it does. But for now, anyway, it seems like a nice bookend. And it goes 18 minutes. You could have probably shaved a little bit off of that, especially at the end when Sean's kind of, you know, roaming around, picking up all the weapons. But I thought it was fine. It's a rare kind of treat to see Sean in a match like this, in a way. Vince takes the shit-kicking like he always does when it's his turn to pay up. Shane, too. So I thought this was pretty well done for what it was when you consider who was involved.
Yeah. Point one, Sean, I feel, didn't have to carry Vince as much as others did. Let's put it this way. I was expecting more out of this match than I did Vince Hogan at 19, because Hogan can't carry anybody. And that match was fantastic. So I knew going in that yes, Vince was, you know, 3 years older, but he was also facing a guy that would help him out better than Hogan would. So I knew going in we were going to get some fun, you know, some fun back and forth. Point two, Shane was fantastic. In a supporting role here and sitting there and being handcuffed to he took the ass plant and then being handcuffed and having to, they told a great story. There's one thing that I'm glad, this was the match. And as much as it's part of the storyline, why they brought JR back, this was the match that would have bombed if Joey was doing commentary. And I love Joey. I really do. He couldn't have done this match. JR had to do it. You needed a play-by-play guy who was really going to bring the pathos out of this feud and out of this match. And he does that.
Yeah, he does.
So the story needed to be told by him.
He's a little over the top, but when you think of all the anger and the fuel there from what Vince did to him in the fall.
Yeah, Dr. Heine and all
it
that.
It makes
exactly
a lot of sense. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it does. It does. And number three, let me ask you this. Is Vince at his, how do I word it? Is Vince at his most sadistic storyline wise and maybe creative wise than he ever was before? We talked earlier, and I'm not going to belabor it again, but we talked about the whole blackmailing Brett by going to the Hall of Fame where we're going to do a hit piece on you.
Yes, I think he is completely,
and
I think he's completely over the top. And
literally, what, 5 months after Eddie Guerrero dies, and he is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, I think, I mean, he's off his,
and he's on Muscle and Fitness, which is even double ridiculous. They're pretty much promoting the fact that he jacked himself up with roids to get ready for this match. It's embarrassing.
I think it's clear that he's off his rocker at this point. I think it happened in the fall with the move back to USA, and yeah, I think he's just gone. I mean, him being back on TV, doing this angle, I think he's definitely at his probably near most sadistic, maybe since some of the stuff in 99 with the higher power and all that stuff. I mean, this is some of the closest I can think of as far as him being just crazy. And backstage is probably the most absurd he's been since like the 80s when he was really over the top. I don't know. But yeah, he's definitely gone. I mean, he's gone. But, you know, he does what he always does. He shows ass here and takes a shit kicking.
Yeah, and It top to bottom, it was fantastic. And he, one thing I got to say about Vince that maybe he should, maybe his daughter should learn now. It doesn't hurt to show a little ass to your figuratively, of course, to your roster to get them over. And to Vince's credit, except Taker at Survivor Series 03, but that was more for storyline purposes. Every guy he's ever faced in a match at a big on the big stage, he's put them over, and pretty good too. I mean, Sean pretty much did whatever he wanted with him in that match. So I'll give credit to Vince for that. And this, I think, bonkers phase lasts pretty much into 07. And we'll go through that. But this isn't the last that Vince acts like he's completely on another time zone. So Shawn Michaels wins the no holds barred match, but Vince, I think the middle finger showed that this feud was not over.
Right. Well, yeah.
My opinion. I don't think we quite saw the end of it. I mean, maybe Vince just wanted to be a dick, but I don't know. All right, why don't we take a break? Really good show so far, JR. Really has been. I hope a lot of you listening who haven't watched it in a while are getting motivated to maybe pop on the network and put it on. Because to this point, it's probably a better show than you remember being, and we still have three matches left, including our two major belt matches, the World Heavyweight Championship and the WWE Championship on the line, and a little eye candy in the middle. But first, many words. Because I'm roided up.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Main Event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. And relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series, led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We got sports covered too with the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast and the TJ McClune Show. PTBN tackles pop culture and irreverence with Richard and the Mailman, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, and if you like a hybrid of all of this in list form, check out Jordan Duncan's Rank and File. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tourneaments and more. We want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
All right, Nation, we're back. I'm going to implore you, as always, to check out PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Lots of podcasts, written pieces to tickle your fancy, of course, each and every day. You can go ahead and follow us on Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, Twitter, Place2BNation, Tumblr, Instagram. Graduation season coming up, Scott. Communions, confirmations. If you're going to be buying gifts through Amazon, be sure to click that Amazon banner on the right-hand side of PlaceToBeNation.com. It takes you right to Amazon, and from there you can do all your shopping, all your gift buying, and kick back a little bit of love to PlaceToBeNation.
Yes. So, yes.
There you be.
PlaceToBeNation. And don't forget about our ebook, too.
Yeah, click on that, and the new one should be up and running shortly as well. Of course, we're winding down our Sunday's main events, so that'll be ebook number two from yourself and me.
Yes, fantastic. It's been great so far. Mm-hmm. It's been a fun journey, and we're reaching the next chapter of our viewing, and we're having just as much fun with that as well as with our network adventures. So, you knew eventually we would find something to really get our network viewing in full gear, because it always seems like, oh, what do I watch? I don't know what to watch. So much stuff. And now we actually set ourselves up with a project, which is what we do best here at Place Me Nation. And now we pretty much are. So, PlaceMeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. All right. Three matches left. Next up, the first of our two title matches, big title matches this evening.
Come on, Bulls!
Four sucks. Anyway, your JR, your boy, world heavyweight champion, Kurt Angle. And not one, but two opponents. Two? How the hell we get two, JR?
On the 224 SmackDown, Randy Orton opened the show by bragging about his win over Rey Mysterio. The bragging continued until Chavo Guerrero attacked him and nailed him with a frog splash. Later in the show, Rey Mysterio was apologizing to the fans when Teddy Long joined him in the ring. He announced that Orton, when winning the pay-per-view match, was official. He'd be heading to WrestleMania. However, he also decided that Rey deserved to be there as well. So he said, screw it, playa. We're going to make a SmackDown WrestleMania main event a triple threat match. The next week, Kurt Angle would barely hang on to his title against The Undertaker, winning by DQ. On 3/10, Angle and Mysterio teamed to battle Orton and Mark Henry in a no contest. Angle received the worst of it when Henry splashed him through a table. The next week, Angle and Mysterio and Orton were forced to team up as they would defeat Henry and Eminem. And at Sunday's main event, they teamed up again, this time losing to John Cena and Triple H. On 3/24, Henry defeated Angle in a non-title match after Mysterio accidentally hit Angle with a seated senton intended for Orton. After the match, Angle shoved Mysterio down, but Rey came back and hit Angle with a 619. Orton fired some verbal shots on 3/31, calling Angle a paper champion and Mysterio a charity case before leaving the arena. Later that night, Angle would defeat Mysterio in a non-title match. Orton would return after the finish and drop Rey with an RKO. Angle came back and took Orton down with an Angle slam and hooked on the ankle lock to close the show. Now, there were a lot of rumors regarding the original plans for this match, and we thought we would run through some of them here. So one talks about a plan that was set prior to Eddie Guerrero's passing, where the plan was for Eddie to defeat Batista and hold the title to Mania, where he would lose it to Randy Orton. After Eddie passed away, it was assumed that Batista would lose the belt to Orton at Mania instead. After Batista was injured, Vince reportedly asked Shawn Michaels to jump to SmackDown to win the vacated title and lose to Orton. Shawn turned the offer down due to SmackDown tapings conflicting with his church commitments. As many here know, Vince would then turn to Angle and ask him to do the same thing as he had asked Michaels. Angle agreed, but requested a feud with Undertaker first, and was originally scheduled to face Taker at Mania before ever all this went down. After Angle won the title, he told Vince he did not think Orton deserved to win it because he was messing around backstage. He told Vince they should do the Taker match at Mania instead. Vince was against it and settled on having Rey Mysterio win the Rumble and win the title at Mania to play off of Eddie Guerrero's passing. Angle offered to turn heel and feud with Rey because he was adamant not working with Orton at Mania, but Vince forced the triple threat to happen. Angle later said that he lost respect for Michaels because of how he handled this and said he was sick of being a utility guy instead of the main guy. Word began to circulate that Orton was acting up backstage, including calling the Divas cunts, acting childishly and reportedly brazenly smoking a joint and open to flaunt that he was exempt from the wellness policy. And he said, hey, Tori Wilson, your cunt is in the sink. The other, of course, rumored match heading into this whole thing was Eddie Guerrero versus Shawn Michaels, which was originally on the books as well. So those are kind of the, you know, rumored machinations for a card that underwent a lot of changes due to injury. That could have went down. So Taker Angle would have been interesting here. And of course, after we saw what happened to No Way Out, I think many thought that. And I think it's also lent some credence to the fact that Rey may have been a haphazard choice after Eddie died. You know what I mean? Like, they kind of really just threw him in here. Do you think that they did him any favors by having him lose to Orton and then Teddy just put him back in the match? Like, I thought it made him look real stupid. He's looked dumb all along anyway with all the Eddie stuff, but then having Teddy have to bail him out and put him in the match for no reason. Like, they don't even give him a qualifier. He just puts him in the match.
Yeah. It was stupid. It was utterly stupid. But it par for the course for this whole feud that Ray is a glad-handing schmuck. So the whole thing was, Eddie, you just, your soul just went into Teddy Long and gave me this match, Eddie.
I slept with your teddy bear last night, and it makes me feel a lot better.
Of all those, so they really, it's amazing. Couple things. I know you're gonna get into the match comments, but your analysis. But I have a couple questions. Number one, I know that it was the payoff to having to eat shit against Taker in 2005, but boy, Vince wanted Orton to be world champion so fucking bad. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter what the equation was.
Right.
On this night in Chicago, Orton was holding up that gold belt by hook or by fucking crook.
Yep.
You know?
And he fucked himself up left and right.
Yeah, by being a total D-bag. This was the peak of mm-hmm. Orton D-bag.
Does he get suspended
phase.
After this?
Yes. Yeah, I looked that up today, actually. He did get suspended after this. He got injured and suspended, both.
Right.
The number two...
Yeah, suspended 60 days for unprofessional conduct, April 4th.
Well, I would...
The injury was scripted.
Oh, okay. I would think so. I mean, geez, Funkhauser. The Divas are not in the sink. You know what I mean? Come on. The joint, I think, was the kicker, though. I think everybody there was just like, you are just such a fucking asshole. And you really have done nothing to warrant doing whatever the fuck you want. Seriously. Mm-hmm. You know? So I think that's another reason why I think Vince fell off the rails. He wanted Orton to be champion so bad without realizing he's a fucking asshole. Yeah. You know? It's number two, what is... If anything, I would have been... If I'm Kurt, what do you have to be pissed off about Sean about? You got what you want. I mean, you're world heavyweight champion. You're in one of the co-main events at Mania. Why are you pissed off at Sean? Sean just gave you this opportunity. What are you so pissed off about?
I think he's looking at himself as like a guy that'll sacrifice anything and be this utility player, where Sean comes off as such a star that he can just reject this shit and not step in to help out the company. It seems like to me that's kind of what he's saying.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah. I think we've talked about it before a lot of times, that Angle never seems to be the guy that gets the rocket. You know, a little bit, we started a little bit around WrestleMania 19, but even then he was just setting up Brock. Like, we haven't really seen, him be the guy. He's always kind of the transitional guy. So I could see why he'd be frustrated with all
but,
that.
But, I mean, do you agree with the whole thing? Did Sean pull a douche move here?
Yeah. I understand the church commitments, but you know what? You know. For a three-month thing to help out the company that's given you a lot throughout your career and given you a lot of chances, multiple chances, to not say, okay, for 3 months I can go to a different Bible class or bring it on the road or, you know, whatever. Find a way out of it. And, you know, did he even have to be on every SmackDown in that time? Could he have worked out a deal to say, you know, I'll be on half of them or three-quarters of them? You know, I mean, they could have still worked around it.
Right.
Yeah, I think it was BS. I think he could have easily taken that, you know, 3 months between... You know, whatever it was, that battle royal on SmackDown, all the way to Mania, and then to switch back to Raw.
Who would Vince have faced? Or would that feud not even have happened?
Right. Well, Vince might have played a role in the segment. Whatever.
Interesting. Anyway, go ahead. Anyway, that was just a couple things since we were talking about the build I wanted to bring up, but go ahead.
All right, so Ray put back in the match, like we said, feels forced. Angle's been a great champ, but like we mentioned, overlooked afterthought. Orton hot as a heel, and really should have been set to win here, like we talked about. I mean, He had all the tools and he was on fire, but such a piece of shit outside the ring. And that, combined with the Eddie stuff, just switches everything around. Ray gets played to the ring live by POD wearing his crazy headdress. Orton gets a great douche entrance and swagger, huge pop for Angle, and he feels like the top guy in the match. Orton drills Angle from behind before the bell, and then goes to town on Ray, hitting a dropkick during a springboard. Angle comes in and hits Germans on Orton, and then a double German on both in a great spot. The pace is wild, with everyone hitting move after move at a crisp pace, stealing near falls wherever they can. Ray rolls through a sunset flip and hits some nasty kicks to Angle's face for a two count. The crowd is split on Ray and Angle, or split on Ray in general, but Angle's still the favorite overall. Ray hits a 619, but Angle traps his leg, goes into the heel hook ankle lock. Ray taps, but the referee was tied up with Orton, and that triggers that Angle isn't winning to me because he gets the visual win there. Angle goes back to the ankle lock again, but Orton makes a save. Angle gets Germans on both, including a 360 toss and an Angle slam to the floor on Ray. Angle then gets the ankle lock on Orton, and he taps, but the ref is tied up. So now Angle has gotten two wins in this match. Angle goes back to the heel hook ankle lock, but Ray breaks it up with a top rope leg drop. The crowd is booing everything Ray does now. The announcers call the crowd weird for the second time tonight. Ray gets posted and dumped to the floor as Angle's just been a machine in this match. Orton floats through an Angle slam and hits an RKO for a really close two count. Orton heads up top, but Angle hits a super belly to belly. Ray tries a 619 on the outside using a post, but botches and fails, and that doesn't help his case with the crowd at all. Ray comes back with a West Coast pop for two. Orton nails Ray with a hanging reverse neck breaker for two, and then Angle hits Orton with an Angle slam for a near fall. Ray blocks an Angle slam with an arm drag, and that sends Kurt to the floor, and then hits a 619 on Orton, and then the West Coast pop and roll up for the win. Big pop for the win, even though he got booed throughout most of this. Fantastic match, I thought. The pace was nonstop. The athleticism was crazy. I thought all three guys looked great. Ray gets his big magic moment to pay off the Eddie story, and I'll give him credit, because they kind of marginalized the Eddie stuff throughout this match. Like, they don't talk about it too much, which was nice for a change. Angle looked like a beast. I thought he was the true star of the match. He looked head and shoulders above them. Orton, credit to him, he hung with these two guys that are super fast, that move around the ring like crazy. He hung right with them. I thought they all got screwed by the length, but in a way, the short length kind of helped the match be crazy, and they you know, made the most of what they had. Ray, an unlikely world champion, he gets met by Chavo and Vicky on the ramp. You know, a lifetime achievement for an all-time legend, but if you're looking at this match objectively, to me, he was the third guy out there that felt like a star. To me, Angle felt like the head and shoulders above the other guys, due to his pacing and his work rate. And to me, Orton was second just due to the way he carried himself.
Yes. Number one, on the Eddie part, you're right. And the best part, the best, Eddie, for once they did something subtle, which wasn't totally subtle, but still was not as in your face, was right before they would go to the next, you know, segment of the show, they panned. They did a still after all the, you know, hugging of with Chavo at the top of the ramp and Vicky and all that shit. The camera just sits on Eddie's picture, you know, because all the pictures of all the superstars, and they just show, they hold on Eddie's picture and then just fade to the camera. They don't even, the announcers don't even mention it. They just show picture, they just show Eddie's picture and then fade to the, and then they just pan to JR and King, which was pretty awesome. For once, they didn't stick your, you know. You know, nobody said, oh, and there's a picture of Eddie looking down at her. Like, they didn't make it, you know, dopey. It was very subtle and pretty cool. Number two, Orton was average in this match. The match was great overall, but I think he could have done more to make it even better. I think he, knowing he was not winning the title, I think he didn't put his full effort into it. Having said that, point three, Kurt is a beast, and I think he's absolutely right that he shouldn't feel like that he's been a 7-year utility guy. And that's a shame. But he felt like a guy that they should have just had him. They should have just called an they should have just called an audible and had him have Orton tap out to the ankle lock and move on. What I think they should have done.
Yeah, but once you get to this point, you kind of have to just go through with Ray. I mean, I agree. I think Angle looked the best out here. I just would have done, yeah, I mean, we're not going to rebook the whole thing at this point.
Ray's
whole run here is, you know, on paper, looked like something we'd be into that we kind of want, you know, but in a vacuum, you know, looking at it here when it actually unfolds, it just never really clicked. The whole thing fell for us. It felt dirty. All along the way, Ray never really felt like the fans accepted him. You could tell they resented a lot of it. And even here, the way Teddy shoves him back into the match, he feels outclassed by the other two in many ways. It feels also forced and didn't feel organic at all. If you compare it to like Benoit and Eddie in 04, it is like, and even Cena and Batista in 05, like it doesn't feel even close to that.
Yeah. Because everyone, because it's obviously if Eddie's not dead, this isn't happening, period. Vince would never, never have given this guy the world heavyweight title if Eddie Guerrero never died, period. There's nothing more to say. There's no way to negotiate it. There's no way to work your way around it. Rey Mysterio would never have been world heavyweight champion if Eddie had never died, period.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why the fans resent it.
And they treat him as such, as we'll see.
Yeah, pretty much, exactly.
They treat him like a redheaded stepson.
You know, that's pretty much what it is. They treat him like, you know, Ray.
Ray,
we like fight
Hercules.
With Hercules. You know, and an extra added bonus that makes him look like a bigger dumbass. It's like when you were talking about the entrances. Ray, when POD starts singing the song, which that song fucking sucks. Ray comes out like with his stuff on high, and then he goes back, and then we have to wait like another minute, and then he comes out with that ridiculous Chief J Strongbow thing on. Yeah. Just the whole thing was just so awful.
It all felt really forced.
It was really terrible. I felt bad for Kurt after watching it again today. I had no sympathy for Orton. He's a douche, and he needed to grow the fuck up. But Kurt, I felt really bad for because he didn't deserve to be a leftover. And by the end, he felt like a leftover. And that sucks because he doesn't deserve it.
He doesn't deserve it.
I don't deserve this. Watching soap operas, eating frozen bagels.
Great for that match.
So it's a fun match for 9.5 minutes. But you're like, all right, fine. Finally, this fucking guy's got the belt. We could stop, we can move on, and maybe he won't hold it long. You know, that kind of thing. But Rey Mysterio is your new World Heavyweight Champion in a pretty good match, but we're just finally glad that the whole storyline's over and we don't have to talk about it anymore.
You would think. We'll see.
You would think. We'll hope. All right. Time for a little eye candy and a little spell to go between big-time championship matches, JR. What is this?
On February 16th, Candace announced that she'd be gracing the cover of Playboy magazine. On March 6th, Candace unveiled the cover and claimed she was the hottest WWE diva and that her cover was hotter than both the Tories combined. Tori didn't appreciate the comments, told Candace she's being a bitch. Candace apologized, but then she and Victoria assaulted Tori and beat her down, bringing the end of Vince's Devils. On March 13th, Tori cost Victoria a title match, and Trish Stratus and Victoria vowed revenge. Tori was set to team with Trish at Saturday's main event, but she was later found unconscious and was scratched from the match. A week later, it was announced that Tori and Candace would face off in a Playboy pillow fight match at Mania. On March 27th, Tori would team with Trish to defeat Victoria and Candace. So the explosion of Vince's Devils in front of our very eyes. A true time filler, palate cleansing match before forcing Triple H and Cena to kind of go on, you know, in a tough spot following the pacing of that triple threat. Both are really hot here. Tori still has the McGinn dog with her dance. Pillow fight gimmick, at least the pillow fight gimmick added something different with the bed in the ring and everything.
Yeah.
Tori gets a nice backdrop onto the bed and then throws the mattress on Candace and hops up and down on it. Tori gives Candace a puppy stink face. Tori yanks Candace's dress off to a big pop. Candace gets a modified tarantula in a very sensual spot. Candace cuts off Tori's dress as the match goes on a little bit longer than we needed it to go. I thought it was hot for a quick spurt in the open, but it didn't really need to drag as much as it does. Candace finds a Playboy magazine under the bed and hits Tori with it. Tori avoids a charge and gets a roll up for the win. Not as bad as you think, but a little bit too long. But I thought it was smart to gimmick it up instead of just throwing him out there on the ring to have a straight up match.
Yeah, I agree. Point one. After Mickey and Trish, you can't have these two wrestle a regular match. That would have been embarrassing. Point two, they're both hot, so you can just make your own decisions whether you like brunettes or blondes. And point three, I think 352 or whatever, 351 was perfectly fine. Perfect enough of a length. And it was the only time pretty much the only time this entire show with a crowd actually took a spell.
Yeah. And it's a little bit more palatable with the women's title match anchoring for the women on this show. You know what I mean? So, mm-hmm. Like, this wasn't our only exposure. Like, they gave the women a big showcase earlier, and this is just kind of, we get a little bit of TNA time filler here. So, it's kind of like, all right, whatever. If this is the trade-off, we'll deal with it.
Right, exactly. And it's not that bad. It's a typical, you know, useless 5 or 6 minute count intros WrestleMania eye candy moment. Which brings us now to our main event, the WWE Championship on the line. We're flip-flopping belts. Last year, the World Heavyweight Championship was our last match, as it was the year before.
Still the same show, though.
Yeah.
Still Raw.
Same show, though, yes. The Raw belt is in the main event. Your champion, of course, John Cena, who has had it since beating Edge at the Royal Rumble. But who's his opponent going to be since Rey Mysterio won the Royal Rumble?
Time to play the game! It's amazing how you knock me off my feet.
February 20th, Triple H won the finals of an eight-man tournament.
Brad dare you to double it?
To earn a title match with John Cena at WrestleMania. I need a breather sometimes, you know what I mean? The next week, with the two men had a tense in-ring confrontation in which Triple H derided Cena's title reign as a transitional one, saying he had no chance to beat the game at Mania. Cena retaliated, but it was a confusing retort, as he kept talking about how great Hunter was, basically putting him over as a legend. There was a lot of debate and consternation over the way the two men acted in the segment, ensuring and in the ensuing promos, as Hunter would continue to run down Cena's in-ring abilities, and Cena just kept putting over Hunter. On Sunday's main event, the two would team up to defeat Mysterio, Orton, and Angle, but during the match, Hunter dropped Cena with a pedigree. On 3/13, Cena and Hunter signed the official contract and then faced off on opposite sides of a six-man tag. On March 27th, Cena was forced to face off with Vince McMahon, but things would quickly degenerate, and Cena would be left bloodied, courtesy of the sledgehammer. Now, what did you think of the build of this? Because the whole hype is that Hunter's the groomed, pampered, trained wrestler, seen as a street-fighting brawler. He's overmatched. He's an underdog. JR even says before the match he expects the crowd to be behind Hunter because he's a traditional wrestler, and they sell it as old school versus new school. So, yep. And they basically say Cena can't hang in a wrestling match, which is weird because they're trying to establish him in this realm. In many ways, it felt, you know, it almost felt like similar to WrestleMania 19, but instead of Hunter saying you suck because you're black, he's saying you suck because you can't wrestle. You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, really, like at 19, right. It's like you, people like you aren't a world champion. He was super latently racist. And here it's, You suck, you're not as good as me. And Cena's like, yeah, gosh, you're right. You know, fucking like he was like the Goofy to his fucking Donald Duck over here. Just, yeah, you're right, Donald. You're the better wrestler than me.
What, what?
So Hunter's playing it up real hard, and the scene is just no match for him. Puts down his skills over and over and over. So what did you think of all this as the resident Triple H fanboy? Did you feel that the build here was unnecessary the way they went about it?
No.
Of course not.
I think that was the point. He's not. Why lie? I hate to say it. He's not the better wrestler. I was very fanboyish during this feud.
Wait a minute.
Strange reason.
Did you just say, why lie? It's pro wrestling. It's all a lie. The whole thing is a fucking lie. No fucking shit. He's not a better wrestler than him. Jesus Christ.
I was so waiting for that. Nah.
You can't lie at pro wrestling. What kind of sorcery is this?
They should have got Sarah the Soothsayer from TNT. Wait to get to those episodes. Oh, God. In all seriousness, I didn't mind it. I think they went a little overboard with it, but I think the whole premise was that, look, Cena, the fans may fall, your fans may fall for you, for your, you know, hustle, loyalty, respect, and your stupid sneakers and your mustache and your dumb jorts, but you're not better than me. I made a legacy out of being the best, being the game, the king of kings. You've made a legacy out of walking around with ugly t-shirts, an ugly belt, ugly jorts, and I'm going to put you down. No problem with that. Cena being told to eat the shit, all right, that was probably a little much. But in terms of Triple H's approach, I had no problem with it. He's the bad guy. And I think they also knew that he was going to get cheered a lot in this match, so they were trying their best to make sure he didn't. It failed, but that I think that's what their approach was, to make sure he got booed by all the quote-unquote Cena fans being told, yeah, your boy is a talentless hack who only won because he's got jorts and pump-up sneaks. So, no, I had no problem with it. My only problem with it was they had Cena eating too much.
That they had Cena go poochie.
Yeah, they had Cena eating too many plates of shit. I agree.
It was Dusty and Nikita and all the super friends all over again, right? Yeah. You got to mention Dusty and everybody. You got to put over Dusty no matter what you're doing.
Exactly.
It was the same thing. Like, you don't need to have Cena out there talk about how great Triple H is. Now, I get the old axiom, you know, you're only as good as the guy you beat, so he's not going to trash him. But talk about yourself. You know, I can hang with you. I'm confident. Not like, oh, yeah.
It's
kind
of like the Three Stooges thing in NWO again. Yeah. Whoop, whoop.
Speaking of cartoons, by the way, a lot of Curious George in this house lately. Could they have picked a more uncomfortable outfit for that poor guy, the man in the yellow hat? He's got like these weird ass high rain boots on, tight pants, a button up shirt, a tie, and the most uncomfortable looking hat I've ever seen. And they make him walk around like this at all times. Like, this guy's always wearing a freaking tie and a button up shirt with the pants and the boots. It looks like the most uncomfortable outfit I've ever seen.
And he's hanging out in the jungle, so it must be very humid. Why would he need? And it's a long sleeve shirt, if I remember correctly. So.
Very weird.
Yeah, very I agree weird. With that. What's with the hat? Strange.
God, he's an odd duck. By the way, I found out, I read the origin story of Curious George.
The origins?
The daughter took it out from the library. Cecily G., the giraffe. You have to read it. It's interesting. It's where the beginning of the Curious George and the family's with it. Anyway.
That's interesting.
Not Dr. G.
How old is Curious George? Yes, I know.
Different hot takes from Cecily G.
Yes, that's right. Cecily.
He's old. That book's from like the 50s.
Oh, wow.
He should be dead by now. Triple H debuts a King of Kings theme here, of course.
Yes, he does.
He also debuts the beginning of the absurd entrances as he does Conan the Barbarian, or Conan, I should say, the Barbarian entrance. He doesn't do a late night routine. He just does the Conan entrance on the Rising Throne. The game comes on, and he officially makes his entrance. And, of course, you get the, get pretty good reaction for that. And what did you think of this new theme?
I liked it. Not as good as the regular theme.
Surprise.
What the fuck did you ask me for then?
John Cena gets this weird gangsta entrance where it doesn't really make sense, but at the same time it does because he's kind of been portrayed as the anti-establishment bad boy. But you get this weird video package about, you know, all the gangsters of Chicago and everything else, and then he comes out on the old he has a bunch of gangsters come out in the old-timey car, and of course they're all played by various developmental talents, one being the future CM Punk, or I guess current CM Punk at the time.
Who's all over the... I mean, they obviously... It's funny because I feel like... They were doing it on purpose because the camera was on Punk pretty much the entire time in that whole entrance. You know, he's on the camera side of the car and everything. It didn't seem like an accident, but I thought one of them was Cabana.
I think it may have been.
One of them looked like Cabana. It may not have been. I'm just saying. One of them, I thought, one of the guys on the other side of the car, I thought was Cabana, but it might not have been. But anyway.
My Cabana wear. So the crowd split on Hunter and full booing Cena. Big match build. We get the intros, the feel, the atmosphere. I thought it really felt like if you put this in one of the stadiums later on, I think you'd really get that big Mania feel because it's in this arena. It hits it a little bit, but I think it's underrated as like a big time match for them. Hunter works the arm to start, shows off a bit on the mat while he rubs it in place of the cheers. JR wonders if this is all getting to Cena. Cena's rattled. He almost gets an FU, but Hunter's schooling him and drills him with a big right hand. Cena comes back with a flurry of punches and a fisherman suplex for a near fall. Lots of booing. A wild atmosphere. The crowd is just nonstop here. Great, great atmosphere. Chanting and booing Cena no matter what he does. Cena tosses Hunter to the floor, crashing him into the barricade. Cena follows and backdrops Hunter on the grating. Cena takes the fight back to the ring, but he gets caught with a jumping knee and dumped to the floor while Hunter shoves him to the steps. Hunter slows things down and picks Cena apart as the crowd cheers on his moves and upon every impact. Hunter goes to a sleeper and chinlock hybrid, locks it in tight as Cena tries to hang as the crowd is just bearing down on him. Cena powers out and clubs away and then hits a power slam and spinning power bomb. Hunter blocks a loudly booed five-knuckle shuffle into a spine buster. Cena recovers and gets the STFU. Hunter lasts for a while and then gets to the ropes. Hunter shoves Cena to the ref and then cracks them both with his awesomely evil low blow. He just lines it up and smashes them both in the nuts. Hunter does a suck it, just like Sean did earlier in the night. He grabs a sledgehammer and bashes Cena to a huge pop, but Cena kicks out as the ref took too long to crawl over. Cena blocks a pedigree and hits an FU for a close two count, and the crowd is just rabid for Hunter at this point. Cena slips out of another pedigree and gets an STFU for the tap and win. A huge moment for Cena with Hunter tapping clean. Really fun main event. I thought the work was standard, but you know the crowd and the general build took it all to the next level. I thought the intangibles made this a very memorable main event. The commentary, the overall heat were great. It's Cena's world. I thought, in a way, you know, this is what we didn't get with Booker. With after the awful build with Hunter being so, you know, demeaning, we at least pay it off here with Cena beating him clean in the middle of the ring with a submission. Whereas Booker didn't get that, you know, didn't get that win. So I think it's an unheralded card overall. It's kind of overlooked, and I think the main event's overlooked. It's really good, and the atmosphere is like over. It's crazy that this match isn't talked about for how good the atmosphere was.
Yeah. I think, number one, I give a lot of credit to John Cena because this was rabid. You could be a competitor for a very long time and never have to deal with adversity like this. When you go in as a babyface, you expect to have cheers. When you go in as a heel, you expect to get booed. But John Cena, even this early in his run as a main eventer, has had to deal with a lot of intangibles in matches, big matches. We're not talking curtain jerkers. We're talking matches where the build is carrying the show and have to deal with just bizarre energy that a lot of main eventers probably never had to deal with. Look at all the greatest baby faces in the history of all of wrestling, not just WWF, WWE. I mean, you know, Hogan and Austin and, Dusty. And guys who never got booed, even if they were in every main event, on every screen, ever, 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 they never got booed. And here's Cena, who's being positioned as like the face of the company with Batista, and he's getting trashed. You know, it was 50-50 for a lot of his other feuds going out of last year's WrestleMania with Kurt and with Jericho and even Edge to a certain extent. But here, against a guy who is easily a heel, I mean, we're not talking Edge, who's a darling of the internet and darling of the fans. I mean, Triple H is Triple H. There's me and maybe, you know, our man Wilkie and maybe four other people. Otherwise, everybody hates him. So to go into that reaction when you really totally weren't expecting it, even with JR saying it, John Cena deserves a lot of credit for not folding up like a cheap suit and really putting on a great match under the circumstances. Number two, Triple H did his best to put this guy over. Under all the bullshit and all the you suck and you're not as good as me, he did it again for the third WrestleMania in a row. He put over the guy properly. And number three, kudos to this crowd. If this is, and we don't know it at the time, we know now that it is the last arena WrestleMania, Chicago showed up. Now it's Chicago. They never not show up. But the energy overall, and they're not gassed.
Great. Yeah, the whole night was great.
I think that dictates to the formatics of the show and just the pacing and how they laid the card out. Not one match. I think one match was over 20 minutes, and that's this one. Vince and Sean was about 19. A couple others were like 12. So they paced it well. Let me see. 12, 14. Yeah. Only one match was over 20 minutes, and it was that one. It was only 22:02. It wasn't like it was 40 minutes or whatever. Sean and Vince was 18:22. So the crowd was not gassed, not like you and Cowboy were about a month ago. it was fantastic, this crowd. In my opinion, one of the best WrestleMania crowds of all time. Is it the greatest main event ever? No. Is it Triple H's best Mania match? No. Is it John Cena's best Mania match? No. But everything together with the adverse crowd makes this a more memorable main event than people, I think, give it credit for. Because I think most wrestling fans, particularly those that are Triple H haters, only want to remember that he trashed the shit out of this guy for 2 months and then just happened to tap out to him. But instead, Cena worked his ass off, Triple H worked his ass off, and you had a fantastic main event, a crazy crowd, but a definitive answer that John Cena was the face of this company.
Yeah, for sure.
And this is where I think finally, I'll say finally, how do I word it? This is the moment where the company thought Cena might have been a notch or two above Batista in the face of the company department.
Oh,
now,
for sure.
Batista was hurt, so who knows what he would have done on this show.
Yeah, but I think it's clear that Cena's the guy that they want out.
Right.
I mean, Batista's like a classic wrestling guy to them at this point. Cena's like a potential like multimedia crossover.
Right, exactly. Guy.
Do you think after seeing how this all played out, you're okay with what happened with Edge losing the belt back in January?
Yep.
Do you think this behooved Cena more than just him and Edge, him regaining the belt from Edge here instead?
Kabooved? No, I think this was fine. Again, if you stuck Edge... Now, having said that, they did a smart thing. They really took the time to give Edge something that would have still made him look like a star. Like if they threw him in the Money in the Bank or some kind of trashy thing like that, then you could easily say this is bullshit and would have probably blamed Triple H for it like most haters do. But no, Edge clearly is the looks better than he would have. And I think the crowd would have been even more pissed off if you had Edge Cena here. Who do you have lose? Are we at the point now where Edge needs to put guys over?
Yeah, well, no, it would just be I would have never had him lose. You know, he holds his belt from Revolution to here, and then Cena just gets to win back here instead of the Rumble.
Right, but there's my point, though. Since when does Edge become the... Do you want to put it in his head that he's the transition guy? At least at this point, we all know that the only reason he won it was because you had to do something with the briefcase. And they kind of fucked up by having him hold it for so long. Would Cena have... Let me ask you this. And I don't want to go too long on this, but... I don't know if I asked you this in a last previous vault. But if Edge stayed healthy throughout the last few months of 05, would this have happened earlier?
No.
Like, what say that he loses at Survivor Series? He beats Kurt at Survivor Series. Kurt just snaps and fucking puts him in the ankle lock and snaps his kayfabe, snaps his leg, and Edge
catches
him. All
right,
so you gain
an extra month, I guess. I mean, yeah, maybe.
But, and then you don't have to, and then it doesn't feel like they rushed. I'm just saying. That's all. I'm just thinking outside the box. That's all. But I don't think Edge looked bad on this night at all.
Do you think it was worth bringing JR back? Do you think he carried the show in a way that maybe Styles wouldn't have?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I love Joey.
And it's not a knock on Joey. It really isn't. But, and I've said this before, Joey, ECW was different. ECW, the old school original ECW was different than WWE. You didn't have to rely on storylines and all that stuff. It was the matches and all the weird shit around the matches at that moment carried the programming. He didn't have to tell stories. Number one, because he was by himself. And number two, because the spots in the original ECW kind of spoke for themselves. WWE doesn't work that way. And unfortunately, Joey, I think, would have gotten swallowed up in all this, to be honest with you. Just my opinion.
Yeah.
And in a match like I mentioned earlier.
I think he could have hung. But yeah, I think JR was needed for the Vince or Shawn. And I think JR called that main event with the gravitas. That was, you know, it was due. All right, so WrestleMania 22 in the books. I mean, I think it's an underrated show.
Absolutely, it is.
I mean, looking back, besides what, the opener? And
Booker.
And that's quick. and the pillow fight's quick. You know, Taker Henry and the opener are probably the worst two matches on the card, and neither are really that bad. And the rest is all, you know, very good to great. So I think it's kind of an underrated mania. I think it's funny because 100%. It's in a weird spot because the product and promotion's in a weird position. It's on a downswing, but coverage was picking up with the NBC deal, Saturday's Main Event coming back. They're kind of in a weird spot. And if you look at it like our buddy Duck from the Blog of Doom looks at it, he goes from backlash or, you know, from post-mania to mania is the year for him, not, you know, he doesn't go by calendar year. So if you look at it in that regard, if you say from Backlash 05 ending here, it kind of makes sense that we get a pretty good mania to close out what was a fairly strong 05. And from what's to come after the show makes a lot of sense when you look at it that way,
right.
You know, from here out
right.
to 23. So, you know, maybe we'll look at it that way too as we go along. But I think as a whole in a vacuum, the show was pretty good. It was a fun watch. It moves along. I thought most of the matches either delivered or over-delivered. So I like the show. I really enjoyed watching it.
I did too. This is one of those ones where I could put it in if I'm, you know, doing something here. I'm on the computer or whatever, and I just want something in the background. This is something I could put on. I could be entertained by this easily from top to bottom. No doubt. I'm telling you, Place Be Nation, listen to us and then pop it in. You'll be, if you haven't watched it in longer than a year, you'll be pleasantly surprised. I think. Pop it in. I wonder who's the beauty, who's the beast.
All right, so as many of you may have seen either on Twitter or Facebook, Kevin Kelly show on a slight hiatus as Kevin's traveling, really busy. He was sick last week, and then now he's traveling Ring of Honor on the road a lot. He's been doing a lot of voiceover work. So it is a little bit of a hiatus. We should be back, I think, in early June. But in the meantime, Scott, we're going to try and take a little bit of advantage of the lull. So as of now, we're tentatively planning to do Backlash next week.
Yes.
And then we'll go from there. So we'll try and squeeze in as many as we can week to week here until Kevin comes back. And also Dangerous Alliance on a bit of a hiatus as well due to some computer issues on Will's end. So we're hoping to have everything back in order over the summer here. Mm-hmm. But for now, Scott and I will, you know, try and pick up the slack and get back to our weekly pace if we can for a little bit here until everything falls back into place. So
yes.
With that, we're going to go ahead and wrap up. Share your feedback with us on Facebook and Twitter, as always. Thanks for listening. For Scott, I'm Justin Warrell. We'll talk to you next week with Backlash 2006.
I think you should tell Brad I need to make these montages.
It's all the big time. I'm on my way, I'm making it. One beat.